Good evening, everyone. We are going to start our June 21st Rules Committee. Welcome to your Rules Committee this evening. We're trying to get through folks as quickly as possible, but we certainly want to take the opportunity to get to know you better. We started interviewing...
Thank you.
Okay, who did this? Whoever did it is in big trouble.
Is this your birthday? I thought it was for me.
I'll share them with you. How's that? Well, maybe you want to find out who this is from before we share. Anyway, we started interviewing folks for our boards and commissions about a year ago, and it's been a really incredible opportunity to get to know the folks that are serving on our boards and commissions. And I have to tell you, I'm certainly impressed with the depth and the incredible experience that citizens bring to our policymaking process. So we really appreciate your time and energy, and we really appreciate you joining us in Salem tonight. So, in case you couldn't tell, it is actually my birthday today. So it's very lovely. Thank you. And there are treats for folks over here, but I don't think there's enough for the entire audience. So.
Madam Chair, I'm just given the choice of being confirmed or having a cupcake.
Okay. I know what some people, since they're chocolate, I know what some people would prefer. So we're going to go ahead. The first three are going to be Eric Larson, and then Amber Onaveros, and then Arlinda Gonzalez-Berry, and then Michael Holston. If there's anybody else that needs to leave soon or has a small child with you, let us know, and we'll get you up as quickly as possible. So, Mr. Larson, why don't you come on up, and we're going to open a public hearing on the Employment Appeals Board.
Right up here.
Come on up here, sure.
Thanks. First of all, I appreciate you getting me on quick, but I'm on my way to Idaho tonight, and I'm going to try to make Baker City by 1 o'clock this morning.
Oh, that's good. Go, go, go.
I do appreciate it. That's not why I said that.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like this particular position?
Okay, sure. First of all, obviously, thank you for inviting me to be here tonight. I'm Eric Larson, 1483. This is pursuant to the directions I got, and that's why I'm telling you this. 1483 35th Avenue, Northwest Salem, Oregon, 97304. I'm interested in the position because it kind of builds on what I've done in the past by way of my legal background. Went to Willamette Law School. After going to law school, I worked in Salem, Oregon as a private practicing lawyer for about 25 years, handling a variety of cases, starting out with a lot of criminal law and basically moving over to civil law after a period of time. During that time period, also, I served as a municipal judge for about 10 years. For the city of Kaiser, north of Salem. And for the last 5 or 6 years, I was a pro tem circuit judge here in Marion County working for the state of Oregon. Since I think it was maybe February 27, 28, I've been working as a pro tem board member of the Employment Appeals Board, and I should mention it's the Employment Appeals Board that I was nominated for that I'm speaking about tonight. And I've been working as a pro tem member of that board with Houston Owens and with Tony Corcoran. The three of us are the board members and handling pretty good volume of cases, probably anywhere from 500 to 1,000 cases, more along the lines, probably 600 or 700. We have about 10 cases that basically we review. There are cases that have come up from the administrative law judge level, and we read the transcripts. We review them de novo for law and facts. We make rewrite some of the decisions. We affirm some of the decisions. And if we're wrong, the Court of Appeals tells us so. So the Court of Appeals is always kind of looking over our shoulder in this kind of work. But anyway, I've been doing that for about the last 3 months. It's interesting work. I enjoy doing it. I've got the work ethic in that I can handle the high volume of work. I've got my 1.5 rating glasses I usually didn't use to the extent that I do now with me to read through these transcripts. And basically, I'd ask your support in, I guess, what's the term, in my nomination for the board and affirming me for the board. So, in a nutshell, I know you've got my resume, so I'm not going to belabor it, bore you even more than it bores me to read that resume. But if you have any questions, obviously I'm here, so fire away.
My only question, Mr. Larson, is why choose this route as opposed to actually going on the bench itself?
Oh, I was on the bench for about 5 years.
Okay.
5.5 years.
And did you not enjoy it, or...
I was a pro tem judge,
mm-hmm.
So I was hired as a hearings officer, and it's limited duration, LD, and it was the kind of situation where you're funded from year to year to year. So
okay.
I was funded, I think, for 5 or 6 sessions, and my particular position wasn't funded after June 30.
Okay.
So that basically that's why I was in the situation of looking for something else
okay.
at that point in time.
Other questions?
Get to Idaho.
Get to Idaho. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your energy.
Okay, no problem. I appreciate you listening to me, too.
Thank you. With that, we'll close the public hearing on the Employment Appeals Board and open public hearing on the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. Ms. Onoveros, Ms. Gonzalez-Berry, why don't you come on forward? Hello, how are you this evening?
Hi. Okay. Thank you, Chair Brown and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Amber Ontiveros and I live at 6049 Southwest Evelyn in Portland. So I want to talk about some of my reasons, and my real reason is a very personal one, and I would like to introduce my daughter to you, if I could. The young woman, Elena, that's hiding under the chair. My interest in this appointment is, I want my daughter to have a really good role model in her life, and I want her to understand the value of public service. So in terms of my background, I am the first person and the only person in my family to graduate from college. I'm the only person to attend graduate school. I'm the only person to leave my home from Arizona. I'm very proud to be the daughter of a self-made Mexican man who worked during the day in the military and farmed in the evening. What kind of skills do I bring to this position? Well, as you could read from my background, I worked for Senator Margaret Carter for a number of years, and so I have a rich understanding of state government, as well as considering her constituency, which is very diverse, one of the most diverse parts of the Tri-County region. I know how to engage communities of color and how to reach out to them and to bring them into the policy discussion. And in my current job as manager of special projects, what I do is I really serve in two capacities, and those are some of the things that I would be interested in my position here, which is I develop strategies for our outreach teams to engage communities of color and low-income populations, and I serve as policy advisor to the general manager and the executive team to analyze the impacts policies have on communities of color and low-income populations. And that's what I would like to bring to my appointment, should you consider me. And I thank you for the opportunity.
What is your daughter's name?
Elena, or Helen in Spanish.
Good evening, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening. My name is Erlinda Gonzalez-Berry. I'm a professor and a chair of the Department of Ethnic Studies at Oregon State University. I came to Oregon 9 years ago. I'm originally from New Mexico. My ancestors settled there in 1598, so picking up those roots was really quite a thing. I am married. My husband Ed and I will celebrate our 40th anniversary this year. I have a daughter who currently lives in Spain. I've been in academia for 35 years, and the early years of academia have been for me pretty much ivory tower, doing teaching, administration, and research. When I came to OSU, however, things changed considerably because, as you know, being a land-grant institution, the expectations are quite different. We are expected to link up our academic duties to communities to serve the population and the state at large. So my focus has changed more to community kinds of work, and I think I've described some of the projects that I've been involved in. More recently, I have just started to work with a group of Hispanic citizens in Corvallis. We're putting together a community organization called Latinos Unidos, and we're seeking nonprofit status. We will open a resource center in the fall to run totally on volunteer work. my own, that of my students and other community members, and our long-range plan is to raise sufficient funds to open a community center in Corvallis, which is really sorely needed. As my academic career draws to a close, I will probably be retiring at the end of next year. I really want to turn my attention to public service, and I think I have some good skills to bring there, particularly the service of the Latino community. I have strong communication skills in both Spanish and English, strong leadership skills, research skills, and with this desire to turn to public service in the next phase of my life, that's why I've submitted my name for this particular commission. I really look forward to working with people, to expanding my experience and my connections with people across the state, and hopefully I do feel that I have something to offer the commission.
Questions?
Okay,
go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am working on legislation on children's health, and hopefully we'll be successful. And one of the ideas that's coming out in this legislation is to get communities of color very involved in access, in reaching out to those who are not insured by health insurance. So do you see yourselves advocating for this with various Hispanic groups in trying to get people onto the children's health plan that we hopefully will get passed? Do you have any ideas on that?
Well, I think it's certainly crucial. Health care is crucial for every citizen in this country. As we know, it's one of the biggest issues, I think, that Americans face. And Latinos particularly, I think the children of undocumented parents, for example, have a really difficult time getting their needs taken care of. And I think we need to educate our community, particularly. Much of the problem is people very often don't know what's available to them, and that's why I'm interested in forming a resource center, is to just make information available to people. And I think quite a bit with students and faculty at OSU who are doing a lot of work and research on health. And it's an education for me to see some of the projects that they're concentrating on. I think we're going to see more of that kind of work coming out of universities, is trying to find ways, especially through the extension programs, to reach communities of color and to educate them and to also advocate for them in the health area.
And the only thing that I would add is that on that particular issue, the thing that I would really like to do is to help develop the message in a way that Latino families would understand, and specifically focus on the disproportionate health effects that affect Latinos, such as diabetes and other forms of cancer that impacts them.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you. You know, the illegal immigration question is going to be huge in the political world, wherever it's at. And I don't expect you to solve the problem, but just to give you a little indication of what I'm seeing. I spoke at a town hall in my district. I live out in Northeast Oregon, and there's actually the town of Milton Freewater, and there's a fairly large Hispanic population there. And I waxed on a long time about all the troubles of the state. The people were concerned about two things after I got and I asked the questions. One was the speed limit law in Eastern Oregon. The second was, what was I going to do about the illegal immigrants? Excuse me.
Right.
And to me, I think that's going to be a really difficult question for you folks to be answering. And if you have any thoughts on it, or if you just rather would say that's, you know, just too politically difficult to be talking about this time. But, you know, it's... As a commission, I think you're going to have to face that.
It is certainly. It's a complex problem, and it's not a new problem. It's been with us for over 100 years. I know the literature on immigration quite well. I teach courses on immigration. I do research on immigration. And, you know, you see the same issues spin around periodically over and over and over. What's different now is the numbers are different, and what's different now are the forces that put hundreds and thousands and millions of people into movement globally, and those sort of forces of globalization. And I think that, you know, the media has really just gone frantic on this issue and have done a real disservice because they're not educating the population. And I think to understand immigration, we really have to understand the broader issues of globalization, of free trade agreements, for example. And I think if people understand why immigration is occurring, it may help us to talk more intelligently about the issues. And I think also that we need to somehow bring to the forefront a discussion that humanizes people. And I'm not sure how this is going to play out. It is extremely complex. It is extremely divisive. And it's extremely difficult for those people who are already here to see themselves, you know, depicted as criminals, etc. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. The board will have to pay attention to this issue. We'll have to get involved. And I think that the role that we can play is attempt to bring some rational, some information, some research, and some sort of rational perspectives to the issue and try to educate people on many sides of the fence.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. In days gone by, what I want to address a little bit is governance and board responsibility. In days gone by, there have been some issues at the Commission for Hispanic Affairs that I think occurred because of the lack of appropriate commission oversight. And I would just like both of you to comment a little bit on what your opinion is about the role of the board, in effect, for the commission that in all likelihood you're going to join.
Well, essentially, the role of the board is to set policy for the commission, in which case we would have, I mean, I believe there is, it's my understanding that there is an executive that staff that advocates for all of the commissions, in which case we would develop our goals, but because there's multiple commissions that would be working setting direction for that executive, we would probably need to work in tandem so that we can set the direction for the executive.
Thank you.
I think the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, given the rough times that has just come through, really does need to clarify its mission, be very sure about what its mission is, mm-hmm. and then we should prepare kind of a long range, or in the beginning, a short range plan on the kinds of activities and work that we need to be involved in that grows out of that mission, and that we truly see our role as a liaison between our constituents and the lawmakers and the policymakers of the state. I've been on a couple of boards, most recently on the board on the Center for Domestic Rape and Violence domestic violence and rape in Corvallis, and this has been a really good model of a board, a tremendous amount of involvement, and the expectation of transparency and reporting in both directions. And I certainly think that boards can be pretty hands off. Oh, we show up to meetings and are pleasant to each other, and then we put it on our curriculum vitae or whatever. And I think that this commission cannot afford to be lackadaisical. There's just too many issues here that are truly important. I mean, we've got children here who, if we don't start to do something about education, for example, their choice, do we want these children to go to prison or to college? I mean, that for me is a burning issue, and I think this commission has to be very, very active and very proactive and involved in the governance. And I think the commission has to set the tone and decide what they want to do.
Ms. Anavaris, did you want to add on to your comments?
Yes, could I elaborate? And also, Chair Brown, Senator Nelson, in speaking to your immigration question, in light of the fact that the Commission on Hispanic Affairs really ought to be working in tandem with the other commissions that advocate for underrepresented populations, I think the immigration reform issue is it's too complex of an issue for us to take on at this time. The commission, if we are going to be a really good advocacy organization that acts as a resource to the departments, to the legislature, to the governor, we need to pick the issues that we are going to be working on, whether it's health care policy, whatever the issue is. And I think immigration reform is too large of an issue. It's economics. It's very complex.
One best left for the federal government.
Well, we're in serious trouble.
I'll let you say that, not me. All right. Anything else for these two? Thank you very much. And it helps if your children are really cute to get them up front. So, there she goes. All right. Mr. Holston? Oh, I need to close the public hearing on the Commission on Hispanic Affairs and open a public hearing on the Land Use Board of Appeals.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Michael Holston. I thank you for the opportunity to appear before you this evening. I'll try to keep my opening remarks brief, and I anticipate there will probably be some questions.
That's a good guess. On this board, that's a good guess.
I'm also wishing I had brought my son. I'm currently a referee on the Land Use Board of Appeals. Before I moved to Oregon to attend law school in 1977, I had worked as a city planner for 3 years in Maryland. After law school, I've worked as a lawyer at the McEwen Gisbel firm in Portland. I've worked at Metro, and I worked at the Oregon Department of Justice. The Land Use Board of Appeals, which is, I think, all of you probably refer to as LUBA, everybody else does, was created in 1979, shortly after the statewide land use planning program was started. From my perspective, LUBA performs essentially five important functions. The first, and probably the most important function, is speedy resolution of land use appeals. Under the statutes that apply to LUBA, we have 77 days after the record is filed to issue a final opinion resolving the appeal. During that 77 days, the petitioner or the appellant has 21 days to write their brief. The city or county and the intervening parties have 21 days to file their responsive brief. So we're 42 days into that 77 days. And then the remaining 35 days, we have to schedule oral argument, conduct oral argument, and then issue our written opinion. So that's the time track that we operate under. A second important function, I think, is that the legislature created us in a forum to allow a less formal forum for parties to participate in the appellate process. Although parties frequently are represented by lawyers, they don't have to, and we have a fair number of appeals where the litigants are not represented by attorneys. A third function that we perform, I believe, is interpreting ambiguous land use laws. The arena of land use is contentious enough, and the parties who participate ultimately, generally, are not able to write the legislation exactly the way they would like to write it. And it falls to us to try to figure out, in the context of an appeal, exactly what that language is. The language that ultimately adopted actually says. A fourth function that I think LUBA performs is to facilitate appellate court review of our decisions. You hear various estimates about how many land use decisions are issued by various cities and counties over the course of a year, but the number is generally tossed out as around 10 to 15,000 land use decisions a year. About 200 of those get appealed to LUBA. 200 to 220 is what the number of appeals we're normally getting now. A small fraction, well, not such a small fraction, about 10% of our decisions get appealed on to the Court of Appeals. And of those cases that get appealed to the Court of Appeals, normally we have winnowed down the number of issues to a fairly small number of issues. And that's the facilitating appellate court review function that I mentioned earlier. A final function that I believe LUBA performs is to facilitate alternative dispute resolution. it's written right into our statute that if the parties request, we suspend, and it applies both to Luba and the appellate courts. The parties can file a request that we suspend the appeal to allow them time to try to reach a mediated solution to the problem. This can be either formal mediation or informal discussions among the parties. We have a fair number of appeals that get resolved that way. And it appears to me that, you know, once a dispute has gotten serious enough so they wound up at Luba or at the Court of Appeals, the parties frequently have an incentive to sit down and focus on what are the true issues among them and try to resolve them in a way that lets the appeal get dismissed and the action go forward as agreed to. I think with that, I think over the years I've developed a pretty good working relationship with people that don't find very much to agree on. What we hear back from them is they appreciate that they get a fair hearing at Luba and we resolve it on the merits, and they understand that we're not policymakers. And I would appreciate four more years to continue doing the job.
Thank you. Just a question on the alternative dispute resolution, having just come from, I was supposed to be back-to-back week-long trials, which is why we're meeting this evening. So thank you for accommodating my schedule, having them both be set over for 6 months. I'm just curious as to whether your statute provides for any, arm twisting is too strong of a word, but you talked about the alternative dispute resolution. How many of these cases are settling? Are we talking 50% through mediation? And could we be doing a better efforts towards mediating and settling more of these cases by the time they get to you?
Chair Brown, members of the committee, there was a time when there was not a lot of money, but there was at least some money made available. It was formally funneled through DLCD. I'm not sure that there is actual funds made available to the Hatfield Center at Portland State that currently sort of manages this process to the extent they want formal mediators involved. So that the funding is pretty much non-existent at this point. On your question about whether what we do in the way of arm twisting is, we don't. It's purely
investigated by the parties.
Right, we let them know that that option's available.
Okay.
We send out a piece of paper early in the process to make sure that they know that. But that's pretty much the extent of it.
Senator Johnson,
thank you. I was just going to acknowledge and thank you for your very succinct tutorial on Luba. I think Luba is a much misunderstood or not even acknowledged part of the land use process, and yours was a very pithy distillation of the work of Luba. I appreciate it.
It's this law degree from Lewis and Clark.
Is that it?
Yes.
Cool.
Anybody else? You either wowed them or they're so afraid they want to ask questions. So, Senator Modis Anderson, go ahead.
One thing you didn't address is the role that you may play with Measure 37, and maybe you have no role except for the appeals with the cities after they make the counties make their decisions for cities. Then they will all be appealing to you.
Chair Brown, Senator Moniz Anderson, at this point, the drafters of Measure 37 were careful to draft it so that the initial process of processing and either granting or denying waivers, those disputes go directly to circuit court.
Okay.
To the extent there are disputes.
So you're
the impact of Measure 37 that we're anticipating is hasn't really started yet, but we're starting to see signs that it's headed our way. And that will have to do with after waivers have been granted, and some but not all of the land use regulations that may apply to that piece of property have been waived, trying to figure out what's left. And we're anticipating that we're going to get appeals in cases where they're going to be the more controversial projects, more than likely, where regulations have been waived back to a given date, and then the task of trying to figure out whether the remaining regulations apply and whether they've been satisfied. We've been trying to put put some substance to that because it'll have a significant impact on our workload. But so far, those cases haven't been coming to us, but we know they're on the way.
Good question. All right, anybody else? Thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to testify on this particular appointment? All right, with that, we'll close the public hearing on the Land Use Board of Appeals and open a public hearing on the Lottery Commission. Is Mr. Eiley available? Come on up.
How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Fine. My name is Bill Eiley.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Most of my relatives can't pronounce it either.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Certainly.
Why you want to serve on this particular
This one. I'm Senior Vice President of Corporate Relations for Harry and David in Medford, Oregon, and Jackson and Perkins. I oversee the community relations, governmental relations, and public relations responsibility for the company. I've been a resident of Oregon for 9 years. And really, it's I come from California. I was in the George Duke Mason's administration in two key positions there. I think it's a sense of giving back to the state. I have some talents, hopefully, in the public relations area, and if I can bring those to bear with the Lottery Commission, I'd certainly like to be able to do that. I've been on the International Trade Commission. I don't pretend to know everything or very much about the Lottery Commission. I suspect I will learn very quickly. I've already met with the staff, and I'm eager to be able to serve the state in any way.
Thank you. Questions? Guess you're off the hook. This is the Health Commission.
All right, thank you.
I'm sure we'll be seeing you again.
I hope so.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Bye-bye.
Anybody else wishing to testify on this appointment to the Lottery Commission? All right. With that, we'll close the public hearing on the Lottery Commission. We're going to open a hearing on the appointment to the Higher Education Board and contact Professor Miller-Jones by phone. My understanding is he's on the East Coast, and so...
It's 10 o'clock.
It's past his bedtime, or at least past mine. Maybe. Oh, that's a good suggestion. So, after Professor Miller-Jones, we have Marianne Topolowski, Bruce Fellows, and Dr. Patricia Parker. We'll go in that order. I think we're off the agenda a little bit. We good, James? Okay. Yeah. Professor Miller-Jones? Oh, great. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Kate Brown. You're in front of your Senate Rules Committee.
Yes.
To my left is the good Senator Johnson. Also to my left is the good Senator Farioli. He's actually to my right, but he's seated to my left. To my right, I've got Senator David Nelson and Senator Manus Anderson. You have a fairly crowded room for the evening, and you are being piped throughout the Capitol, so you are being recorded for posterity.
Oh, fantastic.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to serve on the Board of Higher Education?
Well, yes. As I indicated, I think in my note, I've been pretty active in the state, statewide, for the last 14 years or more, attempting to try to address workforce development issues. Governor Roberts appointed me to the School to Work Committee back in the 90s and worked very hard to try and help schools put together under the notion of that the CAM, the Certificate of Advanced Mastery, would be a mechanism for trying to both increase academic standards but also employment viability coming out of the secondary schools in close collaboration with the community college system. And I've been vice provost at Portland State for 4 years, so I know a little bit about higher ed and as well. I think we have some really serious issues to deal with in terms of the health of the state and its continued progressive development, and I hope to be able to contribute all that I can to that effort. There's a lot of detail, but I think you've got my resume or vita there, and you can see some of the detail. But I have a long-standing commitment, especially to those that are typically underserved by our education system in inner city Portland and in rural communities. We are just finishing up a 5-year National Science Foundation grant that involves 5 universities, including Portland State here in Oregon, but also 2 universities, University of Montana, Montana State, Colorado universities, trying to increase science and math achievement in middle school and high school students that are typically underserved. So I've had just a long-standing involvement and commitment to try and do everything we can to create a integrated system that serves the needs of the citizens of Oregon.
Thank you.
Sure.
Question, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. One of the issues that's come up repeatedly with alarming frequency in my district is the question with respect to the universe around workforce development of drugs and the inability of people in large numbers to pass drug tests.
Yeah.
And given your background and your experience in workforce development, I wonder if you would mind commenting just briefly on any potential solutions, or is this the appropriate work of the State Board of Higher Education when we have people that are unable to pass drug tests for jobs that have good salaries, good benefit packages, and we can't get 9 in 10 people, I mean, we got 9 in 10 people flunking.
Yes. It's a plague that is not just here in Oregon, it's nationwide. And I don't know that a single prong attack is going to do very much about it. I think that you're looking at the state has made great efforts to try and do drug-free work and to do early education intervention through the Department of Health, and I think that we need to do more from the education side to recognize the need to inform students about the consequences of substance abuse and get at it very early on. But I think that has to be something we encourage at the local level. I don't know that we can have a policy statewide that would dictate a particular approach, but certainly we need to encourage the education piece. Secondly, I think we have to understand what is driving young and middle aged people to drug use, and that includes alcohol. I think that we need to understand the connection here between self-esteem and employment and the prospect of having something in the future to hope for, a sense of hopefulness about the future. I think that they, what I've read and what I understand about this epidemic that's sweeping the country is that it's largely the consequence of lack of information and low self-esteem issues, which can be addressed, I think, by having a better connection between individuals and the community. I don't know. That's a big question for me to try and...
Oh, you've touched on the points that I really wanted to touch on. I have one other question, Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
You would allow me. I know that we all don't like to admit this, but there's a certain competitiveness built into our university system, and I would just like your comments on the record with respect to the fact that other institutions may see someone from Portland State assuming a seat on a major policy board with the capability to influence decisions about capital construction and all sorts of other policy issues. Talk a little bit about your ability to separate your allegiance to your home institution and your service on a board that is coordinating the activities of our entire system.
Well, that's a fair and important question. I think, first of all, when I was working to develop the PATH system, the proficiency-based admission standard system, it involved me working with faculties across all 7 of the universities and to try and put them together with secondary school teachers to talk about what we saw as across all 7 as an institution is what we wanted to see in incoming students in terms of the configuration of abilities. But I got to know the campuses very, very well and count among my closest friends in higher education, my colleagues at each of the institutions, as a matter of fact. Secondly, I think I view this appointment as an appointment to serve the citizens of Oregon, and that what I bring to the table is a special role and a special perspective that comes from being a faculty member at large, not just a faculty member at Portland State. Having said that, of course, I think it would be unrealistic to expect me to not use my experiences at Portland State as a ground from which I would try to help advise for policy. I think we've done a very credible job at Portland State serving a huge number of students with relatively few resources, and so we know what it means to try to be efficient in our administration and with our program development.
That's all I was really asked for. I was not trying to solicit a repudiation of Portland State. you fit on my comments. One last question,
sure,
Madam Chair,
sure,
if you would indulge me. On a couple of the comments that you've made, you've talked about and these are my words, not yours, doing a lot with very little and the paucity of resources. I don't know at this early stage whether or not you have an opinion about the creation of any more campuses for the system of higher education in this state when we're struggling so hard to take care of and fund adequately what we've got.
I need to find out a little bit more before I commit myself to closing or opening new campuses or closing old ones. I think we have to look carefully at what we can do and can do well in the state. And I think we have to also be responsive to developing areas. I mean, we have to respond not as though we were Oregon of the 1930s. We are the Oregon of the 2010-2020, and we have to look at where we are, where we're trying to go. And we have to design and make tough decisions, I think, relative to where we perceive the greatest needs are and where we can provide the greatest impact on the lives of the citizens, provide a real benefit for the citizens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your patience.
Thank you. You're welcome. Anytime. And Professor Miller-Jones, it's my understanding that this rotates amongst faculty members. So we had a prior appointee from the University of Oregon, and I don't know if you knew Professor Richmond at all.
I just saw her at one or two board meetings.
Okay.
I tried to call her, but she was not available. She was on her way out of town for a series of professional meetings, and so I'm supposed to get together with her when she returns.
Great. I just think she did a terrific job on this board, but I also think her background in science might be a useful connection as we try and make sure that more of our students that are in underserved communities go into the math and science arena. She might be a very useful connection. So. Oh,
thank you. I intend to pursue that.
Sarah Nelson.
Yes, thank you. David Nelson. I represent the northeast part of Oregon. Eastern Oregon University is in my district, and I can't tell you how important that is for us out in that our part of the country. Our president, or the president of the team out there, indicates that we have a very low population, educated population, a population that has higher than a high school degree population. And he sees that as really a crucial issue from the standpoint of how do you attract students. And I suppose you have that same issue in some respects in the urban areas also, but it seems to me that somehow or another, as a member of this commission, you're going to have to understand and maybe visit or see some of the roles that the rural schools. And I think I could speak for Klamath Falls and Ashland and some of those areas. And following along with Senator Johnson's questions, it just seems to me that there's a very complex issues involved in here, and it seems to me in our part of the country we work a lot with the community colleges, higher education community colleges because we have to, and I don't know if that's true in the urban areas, but if any comments on some of those issues, I just wanted to bring them to your attention.
Well, I appreciate the comment, and I've been getting quite an education. One of my close principal investigators is a colleague at Portland State, chair of the geology department, Michael Cummings, and between our National Science Foundation grant and other grants that he's pulled together, he has been working throughout rural counties in Oregon, Harney County, down by the Klamath Lake, working with very, very small school districts to help those teachers in mathematics and science take advantage of local environments to do the teaching of science and to build mathematical skills. I think that we have to, those of us who are over on the western side of the Cascades, have got to understand our responsibility and commitment to the state as a whole and to do much more reaching out. I think Oregon State, I was just at Eastern Oregon for the board meeting, but I was with the Interinstitutional Faculty Senate there, and we went for a tour of their new science building. And it was really terrific to see the facility that they were able to put together, but they did it in cooperation and collaboration with Oregon Health Sciences University, with Oregon State University, and those universities have faculty and offices in those science buildings, and that's exactly the kind of thing I think we want to try to support and encourage. I will work as hard as I can to bring some kind of resolution and hopeful message to the rural communities in Oregon. I think that there's a lack of appreciation, typically, in our deliberations for the quality of life in those communities, and I think we've got to be responsive to it. So that's just where I am on that.
Well, thank you. Just one more quick question. This is a different issue that's going on. President Fatemi, as part of his program to get more students, high school students, into college, basically made free scholarships available to all valedictorians and salutatorians within his that Eastern Oregon district. I think there's 10 or 11 counties. The problem was it was so successful that the faculty said, well, you're spending all this money over here. Why aren't you paying us more money for our salaries? And I guess what happened was that in some of these situations, some of these high schools have 4 and 5 and 6.
Right, that didn't happen in our day.
It didn't happen in our day. So, I mean, it's just one of those issues. You don't have to comment on that, but I just wanted you to...
Well, I think that was a creative effort to stop the brain drain, so to speak. In the Valley, what we've been trying to do is to recognize the role of community colleges, really critical, and to form close collaborations with the community colleges in the Portland area, for example. When we've just achieved a standard admissions practice so that if a student applies and is admitted into the community college, they are all automatically admitted into Portland State, and there's a sharing of records. And we have to recognize that students move back and forth between the two when they can, and that sort of integrated system is something that I see happening elsewhere in the state as well. So I think that they're promising starts, and we need to understand what we have to do to be able to support those.
Hang on. I'm going to get Senator Ferriola, and I'll come back to you, and then we'll go to Senator Montes Anderson. Go.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would have asked Professor Miller Jones to discuss linkages between urban and rural communities that he's been doing that.
Okay,
I'll yield.
All right, Senator Johnson.
Mine was just a testament to the fact that PSU, in my opinion, is doing exactly what your conversation with Senator Nelson just reflected. Clatsop Community College and PSU have been forming an affinity where you can have the enrollments flow more easily, credits pass back and forth more transparently. And I think it was really with the governor's encouragement, strong encouragement, that as we discussed capital construction for community colleges, there was guidance from the governor's office about trying to see where these linkages between four-year institutions and community colleges existed. And to the degree that we can move students seamlessly out of community colleges, regardless of where they're located, into institutions of higher learning if they decide to pursue a four-year degree, I think that's a very laudable outcome, and I just want to offer the testimonial of the fact that that seems to be in its infancy with the relationship between PSU and Clatsop, and I appreciate the effort made by PSU to make that a reality.
Well, thank you. I completely endorse that kind of collaboration. And the additional ones, so we've had several grants working with the Clatsop community around a series of both meteorological and water quality projects. Bill Becker is at the Center for Science Ed at Portland State, and I believe the SMART program at Oregon State University as well have been reaching up into that that northwestern corner of the state, and I think to great success.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Montes Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on Senator Johnson's point, Mount Hood Community College is in my district, and we just had, I think, 40-some students graduating with their four-year degree from Mount Hood in collaboration with Portland State. So it's wonderful. But that isn't where I want to address my issue. I'm glad to see that you were talking about workforce development. And my concern in particular is, especially in the allied health area, we are woefully lacking in minority students. We just need more diversity in many of these. Do you see the role of the higher board education working at all, or at least collaborating somewhat with some of the other commissions, for example, the Hispanic Affairs Commission and the other commissions that are that deal with diversity issues and minority issues?
At some risk, I will say that I don't know all that's going on, but I have the sense that it's not enough, whatever is going on.
Amen.
I am, if you haven't picked it up, I am African-American and Native American myself, so this is an issue that I have worked for the last 40 years pretty sustained effort around. So I'm hopeful that we will be able to do as much as possible to try and encourage students from the very richly diverse communities that are in Oregon to take advantage of opportunities that are available in both the community college and university system, and of course, in order for them to do that, they've got to finish high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to be sure that we are doing the sort of perspective of K through 20. And I really want to emphasize that's a very, very high priority for me.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Can I add to the pre-K to 20, just to complete the package?
Yeah, pre-K.
Sorry.
Did I say just K?
Yes, you did,
sorry.
But
sorry.
That's okay. I think we're done with questions. We really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. And
I appreciate you allowing me to do this by phone. I'm in a motel in Sturgis, Indiana.
Ooh! I thought you were going to say someplace glamorous like New York.
Omaha and Oregon State did quite well.
Yeah.
I was very pleased. This is where the College World Series
yes.
was taking place.
Okay, well, we're not going to feel too sorry for you then. So,
okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, now, what happens after this?
Good question. The governor's office will be in touch, but assuming we recommend confirmation, your appointment will go to the Senate floor tomorrow. And assuming you get the votes, you'll be officially on the board.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. With that, we'll close the public hearing, unless anybody else wishes to testify on this appointment to the Board of Higher Education. We'll close the hearing and open public hearing on the appointment of Marianne Topolowski. Did I get that right?
Topolowski.
Yeah. Pretty close. Okay, for the Commission for the Blind. Come on up.
Thank you.
I made it.
You did.
No.
You're doing great.
Thanks. Thank you.
Want to tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this commission?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Mary Ann Topolowski, and I'm happy you pronounced my name correctly. Who was it who said that even their relatives pronounced it correctly? So I had to laugh and relate quite well to that. So I really appreciate that. Back in 1997, I went to the Commission for the Blind, and I got training. I received training to become employable, because when I moved out here, when I was 21 years old, I left all of my family in Michigan, and I came out here and had only one friend, and realized that I didn't have any employability skills, and I realized that I was lacking in a lot of independent skills, how to cook, how to clean. It's amazing what your family does for you when you're growing up. Moms are great. Moms and dads love to help, and so do your college roommates that you say, hey, how about you vacuum and I'll clean the bathroom? Except the only problem is I didn't know how to vacuum. I knew how to, you know, knew how to fake it, but I didn't know how to do life. I didn't know how to maintain my environment in those ways. I didn't know how to cut up a steak. I didn't know how to spread butter on my bagel. So when I came out here and I went to the Commission for the Blind, they gave me training for 6 months that changed my entire life. I went and I stayed in an apartment on two blocks away from their center that they provide to folks who get training. And when I stayed, and I got training in mobility skills, how to use this gray cane that I hold in my hand, and how to use a computer that reads the screen to me so that I can use Windows and be employable, and how to manage my finances, and how to take public transportation in Portland, and how to cook and stir together a tuna salad. Y'all think about that next time you eat one. It was something I had to learn how to do. Two years after my training from the Commission for the Blind, I found my company that I've worked for the past 8 years. We've transitioned a bit. I started out in a 3,000-employee company, and now we're a one-site organization. We're a market research firm. We focus on doing technology-related market research. And my company has been proud of the skills that I provide to them, and when I first started there, I didn't have $200 to buy clothes, and the commission gave that to me. So I want to give back. It's my opportunity. When I was informed about the board, it was my opportunity to finally give back and to be able to come and make a difference in the lives of other people, help make decisions about changes that can come about that can make those differences for other people. Because I figure, you know, I believe it's 70% of visually impaired and blind people in the United States are not employed. And I've been employed for the past 8 years with the same company. And I figured if the Commission for the Blind were able to give me those tools, because life is all about choices, as you know. And so if the Commission was able to give me the tools that I needed to build the foundation so that I could be employed, I could beat those odds and be working, and I figured it's my time to give back and help make a difference in the lives of other people who could use those services too. And it's about creating awareness, it's about the choices that we make, and it's about understanding that life isn't about being a victim, it's about taking responsibility for our actions and doing the best that we can. So, there you go.
Wow.
Are you sorry you asked now?
No, I'm really glad I asked, but I'm not sure you're going to get any questions after that.
Oh, but I like questions. Challenge me. I came in and I said, oh, I'll listen to these other folks. Oh, now I know what to say. So, you know, this is the first opportunity I've had to speak on and to be part of a board. So I'm really excited, and it's very, very close to my heart, and it means a lot to me. So I really, really want to be part of what can matter and can make a difference.
This is great. The Commission for the Blind, I know they've really struggled financially over the last several years with budget cuts as we were in the recession between 2001 and 2003.
Right.
I would anticipate at this point we're in kind of a rebuilding phase, but hopefully you can participate in that as we move forward and help provide people the services that they need.
Definitely. I want to. want to do whatever I can to get the messages out there to, you know, to help create those connections. So whatever I can do to make those things happen and make those differences, that's what it's about for me. It's a labor of love, honestly. It really, really is.
Great. Any questions?
I think you're off the hook for questions. I'm sorry. You're the first person who's been honestly disappointed when there weren't any.
But remember, I mentioned I work for a market research company. We take and we conduct surveys, right? Questions and lots and lots and lots of questions. So it's all it's not new for me. So
thank you very much for your time. All right, with that, unless anybody else wishes to testify on this appointment to the Commission for the Blind. Okay, with that, we're going to close the public hearing, open a public hearing on the Board of Boiler Rules. Say that five times fast. And Mr. Bruce Fellows, would you come on up? And then next up, I've forgotten my baseball analogy. On deck is Dr. Parker. And in the hole is Jeffrey Zones. Aren't I missing one? Isn't there one more? No? Okay. All right. Mr. Fellows, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Chair Brown, fellow committee members. Hi. For the record, my name is Bruce Fellows. My residence is Tualatin. What can I tell you? The boiler board. I bring to it 30 years of experience as an engineer. I'm a registered professional mechanical engineer. I have both a bachelor's and master's degree in mechanical engineering. For the last 18 years, I've been employed by the Port of Portland, specifically assigned to the airport. And so for anybody that's flown, you would know of our accomplishments. Since 1988, of course, we've grown considerably, and I've essentially overseen most of those improvements, certainly from a mechanical perspective. I have broad knowledge, not necessarily specific knowledge in any one specific area. The equipment that we have, I think, lends some relevance in that we have a central plant, and in it we have a number of boilers various sizes. The bottom line, it's all about safety, and it's about ensuring safety. It's a field that involves a great deal of detail and attention to detail. And so, again, with my experience in engineering, design, development, operation, and maintenance of facilities, and experience with expansion of the plant, and specifically with growing the steam plant, I feel I have something to offer. So, I appreciate this opportunity to be of service.
Great. Questions? Senator Montesanderson.
Just a comment. I noticed that you are Pan American World Airways when it was in existence. You worked for them.
At the time I joined them, it was Pan Am. And shortly thereafter, the division I worked for was spun off as a subsidiary. And for the 9 years, I watched the company lose $200 to $400 million a year. And not before they had finally failed, but close to that term, I saw the writing on the wall.
Well, I used to work for them also.
Well, I enjoyed the flight benefits while they lasted.
Yeah. Well, you've done great work at the Port of Portland. I mean, it's just... truly, it's got to be one of the most beautiful airports in the United States. I haven't flown a lot outside of the United States, but have any of you flown outside much?
Not much.
Not much?
It's a great airport.
See? Okay.
Well, I offer to anyone the opportunity, give me a call, and they'll be more than happy to take you behind the scenes and see what really happens to the bag.
Oh, I like that.
Okay.
Before it gets put on that plane that takes it to the outer rings of Saturn.
You're mistaken about the part about putting it on the plane. Most of it's just lying on the apron.
I just one question.
Sure, Senator Nelson.
On the airport, I mean, I've always heard that if you're not building an airport, you're not growing. What's going on with it in the Port of Portland, or is that secret stuff?
Well, sometimes we hear about the news before I even the two next largest projects are the three or four, but we are getting in the way with approximately $118 million project to gut and essentially replace all the baggage systems with new inline screening. Huge deal. We're also looking to build a new parking garage, and final decision hasn't been made, but potentially a new headquarters building on site too, consolidating the port's resources at one location. We would like to extend the north runway. That would give us the opportunity to close the south so we could maintain it. Right now, it's very difficult to maintain flights and maintain services at the same time. It's a lot of money. Yeah, some real challenges.
Mm-hmm. A few neighbors up there, too. So people living in the area.
They appreciate the noise.
Yeah, I know. All right. On that happy note, we'll let you go. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming down to join us, and look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed the experience.
Great. Anybody else wishing to testify on behalf or against Mr. Fellows as an appointee to the Board of Borough Rules? It is your last opportunity. Okay, we're going to close that public hearing. Open a public hearing on the Board of Dentistry. Dr. Patricia Parker, as we're up here eating cupcakes and, yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. I don't speak in front of a lot of people, so I just prepared something. I'm going to go ahead and just read it. My name is Patricia Parker, and I live in Albany, Oregon. I'm interested in serving as a member of the Oregon Board of Dentistry because I believe that affordable, quality dental care should be available to all Oregonians. Being appointed to the board would offer me the chance to be directly involved in achieving this goal. I had a great dentist as a kid. His compassion and great sense of humor was a huge influence in my style of practice, and I think that many complaints from the public could be avoided if dentists were better communicators. My career started in 1975 as a dental assistant. I worked with general dentists, specialists, with dental students, and over the years I worked in rural as well as metropolitan areas. While I was earning my degree at OHSU Dental School, I did fill-in work during my breaks from school. As a dentist, I started a practice in a small town. I was the only dentist in a small town. That was for the first 10 years of my career. And in the last 11 years, I've been with a large group practice in Albany. My current position as managing dentist involves practicing dentistry as well as mentoring, supervising, and evaluating associate dentists in our practice. I have experience in all forms of reimbursement, including private pay, insurance billing, managed care, Oregon Health Plan, and I've also participated in the Donated Dental Services Program. I think that my experiences can offer a unique perspective to the Oregon Board of Dentistry, and I look forward to being given the chance to serve the people of the state of Oregon and my profession if I'm confirmed. And that's all I have to say. Thank you. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. Senator Nelson.
Yes, I've did some education looking through your resume this morning, thinking about you're basically involved in the managed care group right now.
Actually, we have all, I mean, that's the majority of our practice, but we do accept all forms of payment.
In the general medical field, it's been my impression that managed care works in some cases, but fee-for-service is actually better. But it sounded like from what I'd heard today was that managed care actually works quite well in the dental field. And I would, is that your sense of that, or could you comment on that?
Well, the thing that I like about managed care is that it offers an ability for people that may not otherwise have been able to afford to get comprehensive care to do that, because it's generally a less expensive, for the employer. And so some employers that might not be able to offer a private service or private insurance company because of the premium are able to offer a plan, a managed care plan, which allows those people to get treatment that they otherwise might not have sought.
In our part of the country, I mean, just the broad medical field, I mean, managed care hasn't worked very well. But like in Bend, it seems to have worked well. Corvallis, it seems to be working.
Mm-hmm.
But we just have folks that aren't taking patients under the managed care proposition anymore.
In which one?
In Eastern Oregon.
Oh,
I mean, in the broad medical. But I had the sense I had this morning that actually it's working in the dental part of it.
It seems to be very successful, yeah.
And the sense I got was you guys deal more in preventative things rather than reacting to things. Was that a fair statement?
I think that's our goal. Yeah. And I think dentistry as a profession is heading in that direction, evidence-based philosophy, rather than treating the results of the disease, treat the disease itself. Yeah. Is our emphasis.
I was like, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sarah Monis Anderson.
Mm-hmm. I deal a lot in my health committees with scope of practice, and access to dental care is very high on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have dentists everywhere. And so there are a lot of, especially children, who do not have access. How do you feel about scope of practice issues, expanding dental assistant and dental hygienist, since you have been a dental hygienist?
Yeah, actually, well, I'm sure you're all familiar with George McCulley, who was the dentist that resigned from the Board of Dentistry. He was the president of the Board of Dentistry, and one of his we grew up in the same neighborhood, which was kind of ironic, but anyway, one of his big emphasis when he was serving was that very thing, to try and increase, like possibly get a dental nurse situation where as it stands now, you have the dentist, you have the dental hygienist. Dentist is a doctor. The hygienist is a 4-year or 3-year degree, but they're a licensed, and then assistant and expanded function assistant. And there's kind of this gray area between the hygienist and the assistant, where the hygienists, because of their amount of training, are being taught to do some expanded functions that probably the assistant could do a lot better, but they're not licensed to do them. Mm-hmm. So the hygienists become licensed to do things that the assistants are probably better at. So there's a real need for that in-between person, that one that's perhaps like a nurse practitioner, only in the dental field, where it's maybe a 3-year community college degree like a hygienist would get, or a 4-year degree, and so they could do some more of the expanded functions that are being assigned to the hygienist, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but...
That's another workforce issue.
It's true.
I mean, in Allied Health, it's
well, and actually critical. The military does that very thing, and it works quite well. They have dental nurses that are able to do injections, and, you know, they don't do preparations or anything like that, but they can do the restorations and things. And, you know, I believe that we have a shortage of practitioners, and that is something that's really going to be needed in the future.
It's hard to get dentists, though.
It's really hard, and that's why Dr. McCulley resigned, because he was really shooting for that. And I think it's a good idea, although, you know, it's definitely something that has... I mean, we already have such short resources when it comes to funding programs, and the hygiene program at the OHSU was eliminated, but a couple of other programs have been started to make up, you know, some of that loss. But it is really, you know, the expense of starting new programs and that sort of thing makes it very difficult. Yeah.
Dr. Parker, I represent children in abuse and neglect cases, and I will tell you that 1 out of 2 or higher of my kids have huge dental problems at very young ages.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most effective models I've seen for delivering basic health care to kids has been the school clinic model. Is that a model that could work for the dentistry area? I'm just really sure. I mean, I can't tell you the horrors. One little kid who had 11 teeth removed. I mean, mm-hmm. just awful, mm-hmm. awful stuff.
Well,
or do you have any other brilliant ideas?
Yeah, I have tons.
Okay.
I'm not nearly enough time to go into all.
You're doing great off script, though. You're doing great.
Thank you. Well, you know, that issue is a little difficult. There's a huge underserved population. There's a there's a big gap between people that possibly qualify for Oregon health plan assistance and those that have insurance, people that, you know, make too much money to get state assistance, but they don't make enough money or they don't work in a job that offers insurance. And, you know, our company, the company that I work for, is really emphasizes early childhood intervention and teaching the parents the information they need to help their children not, you know, have these problems. And I don't know, I'm not familiar with the program that you're talking about, the in-school, but in my area we have several volunteer, you know, during the year where dentists volunteer to bring people into their offices and more like that.
I've also taken to distributing dental floss, but I found it's more effective with the little older kids as opposed to the little younger kids. So.
And that's really hard. That's been an ongoing issue for a long time. And I think the big thing that, you know, that's changed is just making, I guess you could, in a common term, user-friendly, just so that kids aren't afraid to go to the dentist and that parents don't pass on that fear to their kids. And are more, you know, oriented in prevention.
All right. Anything else? Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate your time. Anybody else wishing to testify on the Oregon Board of Dentistry on this particular appointment? I think you're off the hook.
Thanks.
I'm going to close the public hearing on that. I'm going to public hearing on the Government Standards and Practices Commission, Mr. Jeff Jones.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. Right. Hi, welcome. I just want to, on deck, we've got Ramiro, is it Gaitan?
Yes.
Ramon Hernandez, and then Susan Latham. Is that right? Okay. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to serve on this commission.
Will do. I've been in Portland for about 2 years. I live in Selwood. I'm an attorney at a small labor and employment firm entitled Baron Liebman.
We won't hold that against you.
I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Before going to law school, I went to law school at the University of Michigan. Before that, I was a professor of philosophy at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. I did a PhD in philosophy at the University of Wisconsin, Madison. During those years, I spent a lot of time thinking about researching theoretical, applied, and institutional ethics when I started practicing as a lawyer and looking for ways to get involved in the community. I was fortunate enough to meet Nancy Gostarand, who mentioned there might be a vacancy. and I thought, well, here is a commission where I might actually be able to add some value with my opinions. It was also a commission whose subject matter was something that wouldn't take me a long time to get up to speed. And so I thought I could learn and master the laws very quickly and sort of make a positive impact. So that's why I'm here.
Two questions. What brought you to Oregon?
Oh, the obvious? Well, you know, I don't have any relatives here. I came here with my wife. But when I finished law school, I was fortunate enough to have lots of opportunities, and for years I had been hearing so many good things about the quality of life in Portland, the weather. I grew up in Wisconsin, so it's flat, very cold winters, very hot summers.
Humid.
Very humid. Yeah.
Okay. I'm from Minnesota, so I can relate.
Kindred spirits.
Yes. My other question, we have really struggled over the years to adequately fund the Government Standards and Practices Commission, and last session we funded a project through the Law Commission to really take a hard look at our ethics laws, which frankly I think are very hard to read and understand for the average person, and also how we fund the GSPC. And I guess my struggle with it is I see there's a real conflict for the legislature to hold the purse strings for this agency that's, you know, the role is to uphold the ethics of the legislature. Any thoughts on that? Are you watching what the Law Commission's doing in your spare time?
I have paid some attention to that. I mean, there are two things that I think about it off the top of my head. One is that there's certainly a question about there's an ethical issue about the independence of the commission and the capacity to render objective and fully open judgments, with the understanding, with the knowledge that perhaps adverse judgments to particular senators may result in what some might call retaliatory legislation or funding. But I would also say that demonstrating, proving that hypothesis, proving, for example, that an adverse decision against one or another set of public officials was somehow a causal factor in the reduction of funding for a particular agency, I mean, that's a pretty long chain. And I, you know, to be honest, I don't know how one fully assesses that. The other thing that I think is, certainly it would be ideal or more attractive to try to find a way to fund this commission maybe from general revenues as opposed to sort of having to ask for money every cycle. And it's shown that it's worked better, or it's worked well in some states, like Nevada. But beyond that, I don't have any solutions for you.
Thank you. Other questions?
Yes.
Sarah Nelson.
It's now my understanding that Patrick Hearn is leaving. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How is the his successor chosen? Is that?
Well, the commission actually gets to decide who will succeed Pat Hearn, with some help from another state agency. I don't know which one. But we actually will get to make the decision after this other organization actually helps us to identify a pool of qualified candidates and goes through whatever screening processes need to be undertaken.
Department of Administrative Services. Yeah.
And a follow up to that.
Sure, Senator Nelson.
The reason I ask that is that part of the problem I think with the legislature was that the current director had lost the confidence. Mainly because he charged a lot of us with violations, and he lost. And it cost the state $500,000, which was about their budget. And it was just kind of the sense of trust. I mean, if we do something wrong, we ought to really be subject to the thing. But he filed these charges on the basis of a newspaper article.
Right.
Without a lot of substance, and he got maybe because of the kind of the ambiguous nature of the laws, but it just nobody had any trust in him anymore. So I think if you have a new director coming in and you guys do a pretty thorough job of figuring out who that is, I think you're going to find a lot more help and assistance from the legislature, because I mean we want to make sure that we're doing the right thing. And it's just that when we don't think we're treated fairly,
right,
and then we are proven the fact that we're treated fairly, and it costs the state $500,000, then we just don't have the confidence in that person.
Well, I didn't realize that Pat Hearn actually sort of had that track record.
I was one of the guys in charge.
Oh.
Well,
I didn't know that. Okay.
He was 0-7.
Right, and I mean, my understanding of the way the commission worked, I've only observed one meeting. But the ultimate decision to undertake an investigation is actually something that has to be voted on by all of the commissioners, and the extent to which perhaps Mr. Hearn was directing with a heavy hand as opposed to educating the commissioners to make their own judgments, I simply can't speak on. But I mean, to the extent that a lot of money is being wasted by the commission on investigations that don't pan out, I mean, I would agree with you that a better or more enlightened executive director would be the ideal thing to do, or the ideal path to go on.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I might just commend to you the opportunity to look at what the Law Commission Review is doing. I'm sitting on one of the subgroups. It was a large committee that was put together to look both at the funding question, as Senator Brown pointed out, as well as some specifics of the relationship between campaign money and the discharge of official duties. It is my observation that the Law Commission has gone into some terribly esoteric areas. And I know that there are some summaries of the work to this point that have been collected, and assuming that you're going to pass out of this committee and be voted on affirmatively on the floor, you might want to come up to speed quickly and see what the Law Commission has been doing. because it'll all have to go through the session at some point or another. Some of the recommendations will be successful, some will not. But I think it could give you a very quick tutorial in what some of the hot issues are that swirling around in Oregonians' minds about the relationship between campaign and discharge of duties and those sorts of issues.
Thank you for the recommendation. I will, if confirmed.
Also, I just certainly ask that you thank your law firm. This particular commission spot may or may not take time. We don't know, and depending upon what the future holds, but we just really appreciate the law firms and the businesses and the corporations supporting folks in doing this public policy work because it's really critical. So, thank you. Anything else? I think you're off the hook.
All right.
Have a good evening. All right. We'll close the public hearing on the Government Standards and Practices Commission unless anyone in the audience wishes to testify. Seeing no one, we're going to open the public hearing on the Board of Medical Examiners. And Mr. Guy Can, would you please come forward?
Thank you.
Good evening. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you. In 16 years I've been in Portland, you're one of the few that say my name correctly the first time. My name is Ramiro Gaitan, and I live in Portland, Oregon, and was asked by a friend if I would like to be part of one of the two public members for the Board of Medical Examiners, and I thought it was an honor and a very important job I could do to help with the public and do part of my civic duty. I'm, as you see in my resume, probably my background is in industrial design, so I cannot bring medical advice to the board, but I could bring in an analytical point of view, and I have a period of experience in the public service in Colombia. I'm originally from Bogota, Colombia, and I used to help a lot in school and later at college and with the different aspects of public education, etc. So this gives me an opportunity to help and give an example to four of my daughters, and that's why I'm here and hopefully be confirmed.
Okay. Questions? No question. Looks like you're off the hook. Are you, all your daughters here in Oregon?
Yes. Okay. I have four. The oldest is 18, and she's just going to start college in Willamette across the street.
Oh, great.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's a lot of wonderful internship opportunities. You should let her know during session at Willamette. We work very closely with a number of Willamette interns.
I've been telling her about that.
Okay. Yes. All right. We do have a question. Senator Nelson.
I'm just thinking about the issues that we always hear about in the Board of Medical Examiners, and one of them is the sort of the tension between the right of the public to know and your investigations of a particular doctor or whoever it is, and that's seems like every session I've been here, we've always had an issue of how much information we should go, and I don't know if you've looked at that or thought about that, or do you have any comments on it?
I know that I haven't had a chance to really sit down. I just started this process. I'm going to have an induction in a couple of weeks, but it's just common sense that it's an ethical issue, that it's very important that you have that you carry this job with the most of ethical principles. And I don't know, the public disclosure about the information that you receive or what you can talk about or say, I know they have different committees and processes that the board already has established, and I will learn about.
Okay,
but I can't give you any information.
Something always comes before us in the legislature. There's always that intention, and so we look to the medical board to say, okay, how are we going to solve some of these
things? Uh-huh.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Monson-Anderson.
Just to follow up on that very issue, we get the impression that the physicians protect their own, and our focus is really to protect to protect the patient and their rights. And so I don't know
if that more transparency will occur in the Board of Medical Examiners or not regarding reporting those physicians who do have a record of poor service.
Well, the board can only act on the information it receives.
Mm-hmm.
So once it receives that information, it can start acting and determining what course to take. But as far as transparency is concerned, I'm sure the board would be very transparent with all its findings and what it learns as far as its public.
Yeah. I think after you've been on the board a while, and if I have an issue, I'm going to give you a call.
I'll be glad to answer. I'll be coming down to Salem to visit my daughters.
Okay, perfect.
Good deal.
We'll have lunch.
Okay.
Any questions, Senator Farrell? Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Thanks.
Anybody else wishing to testify on the Board of Medical Examiner's appointment? With that, we're going to close the public hearing, open a public hearing on the board, Oregon Health Sciences University. Mr. Hernandez. What did I say?
Health Sciences.
Oh, well, it's Oregon. Everybody knows. I did want to comment on the fact that OSU had how many spellers in the National World Spelling or in the National Spelling Bee Championship, and no other universities had. Oregon State University had two or three. It was pretty impressive. Good evening. Welcome.
Good evening, Senators. My name is Ramon Hernandez. I'm an attorney with Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt, and it's a pleasure to be here before you this evening. I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself and why I want to serve on the board. I'm originally from Eastern Oregon, out near Ontario, Oregon. My parents immigrated from Mexico over 50 years ago and settled in the Treasure Valley, where my father worked for the railroad, and the family also worked in the fields. I went to Treasure Valley Community College, graduated, and then transferred to Oregon State University, where I received my... Yes, I was glad to hear...
Are you a great speller?
Unfortunately not. I rely on spell check quite a bit. But I received my degree in general science, and I received my commission in the Air Force after going through the Air Force ROTC program. And then I served in the Air Force for approximately 5 years and separated at the rank of captain to pursue a law degree. And I graduated from Lewis and Clark in 2000. And I've been with my firm ever since.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're very pleased you're willing to donate your time and energy to serve on this board. We've been working hard to diversify the board to help work towards meeting the population needs that it serves. So, questions? Yeah. Sarah Nelson.
I don't know.
No. Don't ask about the tram.
I'm not asking about the tram. I'm just talking about the 800-pound gorilla that I've seen in the advertisements lately, and healthcare is where that's at. See, now even now you lost your face. I'm working on it. An 800-pound gorilla, where did that come from? It seems to me that in our part of the state, Eastern Oregon, I mean, OHSU is well thought of. They take care of a lot of things for us. They provide a lot of service for us, give us a lot of access. But it seems to me they work with a public relations problem sometime. And I think in the last session we came up with some misunderstandings. And I do recall a letter from the co-chair of Ways and Means saying that he had to get together with the Oregon Health Science University folks and say, okay, you know, what services are you really providing? But it seems to me one of the biggest things you're going to have to do to look at as being on the university board is this public perception that you are the 800-pound gorilla and that you get public state assistance and all these other people out there fighting. And I don't know if you have any comment or any thoughts about that or thought about that issue or not.
Well, Senator, I being new to the board, I'm new to the processes, but what I can tell you is my own individual perception, what I hear from folks in the local community, friends, family, and I would agree that there is a perception that OHSU does not serve all of Oregon, but I think that it has made some efforts in that regard in its outreach to the rural communities. A very good friend of mine, she's the former roommate of my wife. She was a physician. She went through the OHSU Medical School and actually worked at Holy Rosary Hospital in Ontario, Oregon, where that's where I'm from. And so I do think that it's made some efforts in that regard to sort of smooth over any public perception. But I agree, there is more work to be done.
Just for I look at the OHSU as being a jewel. In the state of Oregon, I mean, you have 11,000 employees just in the state of city of Portland. That helps us out in Eastern Oregon University. Seems like the Oregonians always beating up on you guys for some reason. You're doing something wrong. And to me, it's, you know, this is all about communication. And you, as a board member, I mean, I really think that these boards have to get out and start educating people and saying, you know, these are really the good things we're doing, because I'm a great supporter of OHSU because they really help my people out in my part of the country.
I agree, Senator, that there is work to be done on improving the image and improving the communication so that there is a transparency to maintain the relationship that OHSU has with the public.
Yeah. Thank you.
Senator, guess you're off the hook.
Okay. Thank you, Senator, for your time.
Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate your willingness to serve. I think this is the closest work that, I don't know if you do any pellet work, but this is probably the closest experience. I always felt like this was as close as it comes to doing appeals work. Do you do any appeals work, or you all?
I haven't.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll close the hearing on the Board of Oregon Health Sciences University and open the Board of Psychologist Examiners, Susan Latham. Come on forward. You knew you were next. So we got Sue Nelson, Aaron Devaney, and Joe Basler on deck. Go ahead.
Thank you, Senator Brown and committee members, for the invitation to come and speak to you. My name is Susan Latham. Thank you for pronouncing it correctly. And I live here in Salem, Oregon. I have been a 30-year employee for the state of Oregon, and I'm now pleasantly retired. But all my career has been spent in mental health, and I have a master's degree in social work. I truly believe that the general public, and it is a public member that I am applying to be, needs to be carefully protected and cared for by those who are treating them, particularly people who are vulnerable through mental disease or mental problems. So going on this board to me means that I have a responsibility to make sure that there are code of ethics and state statutes in place, as well as standards for making sure that those people who are qualified to become psychologists are, but that if in some instances they fail to do what they are commissioned to do and by state statute asked to do and by their own code of ethics agree to do, that they do that, and if they don't, there is a mechanism for disciplining them or even taking away their license so that those who are vulnerable and need care can receive the care that they should have and that it is equally given to all. Do you have questions?
Senator Nelson, it's totally fine.
That's a good one. Well, I just know that they're in the last session, I'm just going to kind of by what issues that have happened last year, there'd be a huge scope of practice issue, and we ended up with the psychologists in my part of the country, the Eastern Oregon part, who are saying they're just overworked. They need to be able to expand some of their ability to prescribe and to treat patients. It seems to me the biggest problem you're going to have is dealing with the psychiatric organization, because the psychiatrists are saying, well, we don't think they ought to be doing some of these things. It goes back to a lot of what Senator Mona Sanders was talking about, is access to health care. And I see that as equally important as making sure everybody's treated fairly. we have just a huge problem in our part of the country where people aren't getting the care they should be having. We just don't have the people out there. And I don't know if you have any comment on that or thought about that. Or
you're speaking a little bit of territory I'm not too familiar with, but I do know that in New Mexico that psychologists do have the ability to prescribe. And I know that it has been talked about in Oregon, but I actually am not current on where it is.
Yeah, I think it's an issue that's going to come up in the next session. That's why I'm here.
Oh, good.
We have bills all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes they get a hearing and sometimes they don't, but it is a big fight between psychologists and sort of like with nurse practitioners, yeah, what they went through with physicians.
I can appreciate that because I have the majority of my experience has been at the state hospital working. Well, I was the director of the Children's Secure Treatment Program. I supervise psychologists and I work with child psychiatrists, and I can understand the battle that's coming, but it's one I'm ready for. I would enjoy being a part of that discussion.
Okay, great. Somebody who gets excited about a scope of practice issue. Have you ever thought of running for the Oregon legislature?
No.
I was like, I'll say no, since you're in Senator Courtney's district, he'd be very upset.
No. As you can see, if you saw my resume, I do a lot of work with Habitat for Humanity, so that's my other great love as opposed to being a legislator.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time. Anybody else have any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Anybody else wishing to testify on the Board of Psychologist Examiners? Hearing, seeing no volunteers, we're going to close the public hearing. We're open public hearing on the Public Employee Benefit Board. Ms. Nelson, come on forward.
No pronunciation challenges there, and as far as I know, no relation to Senator Nelson, but I'm hoping it makes a good impression to have.
That's wonderful.
Chair Brown and members of the committee, as I said, my name is Sue Nelson, and I have the good fortune of being nominated for your consideration for the Public Employees Benefit Board. I am coming up on my 22nd year in state government. Started out with the Department of Justice in 1984 with the Child Support Division, and since 1998 have been with the Department of Human Services. I've served in a variety of capacities in management with DHS and had the great fortune, really, to always be in a position of supporting one part of that workforce or another since I've been there. Our workforce, like many other state agencies, but this is the one I know most about, so I can tell you our workforce has some very difficult jobs, taking care of people with severe mental illness, as your last speaker spoke about, taking care of people with developmental disabilities, removing abused and neglected children from their homes, you know, encountering severe situations such as meth in those homes oftentimes. So I am not in a position where I can perform those functions. I am honored to be in a position where I support the people who do that very difficult and very important work. And most of my experience has been, aside from general management, also in human resources, so in collective bargaining, not so much on the benefit side. So I have a bit to learn about plan design and working with providers. I did have an opportunity to observe one board meeting, and I was just pleased to say that I'm pretty sure I understood at least 99% of what I heard there. So it gives me hope that I can learn what I need to learn about the benefit side of the human resource concerns that we have. I do believe that because of the difficult work that our workforce faces in state government and knowing our challenges in recruiting and retaining a quality workforce is that their health is very important. And so I have a strong interest in seeing the workforce be healthy. I think that directly translates to better client service and better service to the public. The reason that this particular board opportunity is exciting to me at this particular time is the board's vision. I don't think that we the board or that we in just Oregon state government can single-handedly bring health care costs down or overnight change the system even for our employees. But what the board has said in their vision is that we can demand more for our health care dollar. So focusing on outcomes as opposed to just volume of, for example, doctor's office visits that may or may not result in a positive health outcome but can cost a great deal of money. So the board's vision has been to really work with plan design and work with plan providers to insist that we get health outcomes for the dollars that we give. And some of that is centered around evidence-based care and a growing emphasis on that, and also an emphasis on looking from a more public health perspective, prevention, and making good individual choices and providing people with the support and the tools and the education they need to make good health choices for themselves. So that's what's exciting about this board appointment for me at this particular point in time. What I hope to bring is one of the main focus of the board is how to better engage members to make those good choices, and I hope that that's the strength that I will bring is hopefully the ability to help engage members and the workforce more effectively.
Thank you. Is she okay with you?
Anybody else?
I'm really curious about the Oregon building where the health division is housed in Portland is a tall building. I can't remember how many stories, 12 or something, but I know it's pretty hard to go from floor to floor, and I just know that they're working on getting that more walkable so that people are walking to the 11th floor as opposed to taking elevators, really basic stuff like that. I think it makes a huge difference. And
I can say that in support of my public health colleagues, I've taken that walk from the first floor to the 11th floor.
Great.
They actually have pictures and motivational, phrases all along the way. And as you get closer to the top, there are actually more of those things because you're stopping longer to catch your breath, so there's a lot of reading time for you. But they have tried to create incentives both in the Portland State Office Building and here in the Human Services Building in Salem as well.
Great. And I appreciate all the little notes in the PEB newsletter about what we should do to remain healthy. So we read them religiously. All right. Any other questions for Ms. Nelson? Thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to testify on this appointment to the Public Employee Benefit Board? Seeing no takers, we're going to close the public hearing. Open the public hearing on the Student Assistance Commission, Aaron Devaney. Did I get that one right?
Hello.
Devaney, okay. I was like,
You're overthinking these things, man.
When your last name is Brown, it's pretty easy to overthink them.
Thank you very much for having me here today, Chair Brown, committee members. My name is Erin Devaney. I am just wrapping up my fourth year as a student at Portland State University.
Does this mean you're going to graduate soon?
Soon.
Okay.
Soon. I'm aiming for next spring. I am coming before you today with the appointment for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission student position on that commission. And I'm just going to talk for a few moments about why I would like to be on this position, some of the work that I have done in my past 4 years as a student at Portland State University. First of all, I'm very, very excited and honored to be appointed to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission because what this commission does around work around need-based aid and programs of access to higher education is what I have worked on as a student in higher education for the past 4 years. It's something I feel extraordinarily passionate about. And I'm very excited to have the opportunity before me to be able to expand my work in this field. I come into my student position at Portland State as a first-generation college student. I am the first person in my family to be able to attend an institution of higher education, and I'm very excited that I will be the first to graduate soon. And
good.
Also, being a student who comes from a low-income background, being able to identify with a lot of the access barriers that students face coming out of high school and seeking to attend an institution of higher education as well. Over the past 4 years, I have worked in various positions in student government as well as working with other student organizations on campus and external organizations such as the Oregon Student Association and in coalitions branching out of that, working on access issues of higher education anywhere from the local level with MPSU to the state level, working a lot within the state legislature and then also up to the federal level, working on federal issues of access to higher education with anything from Pell Grants and Perkins Loans to the Higher Education Act. And this last year, I had the honor of serving as the student body president for Portland State University. And in addition to doing that, I also chaired the Oregon Student Association Board of Directors, where I got to oversee the process in which we chose the issues for the next legislative session that the students will collectively be working on. And within those issues, of our three priority issues that we set forth to work on this next year, of them, the Oregon Opportunity Grant, Oregon's Only Need-Based Grant, and the Aspire program were in those three priority issues. So I have a great deal of passion and knowledge surrounding these issues that we will be working on, or students will be working on, in the next legislative session, and they're also programs that OSAC implements. So that's very exciting for me to be able to continue my work on that. I've also had, over this past year, a lot of experience working with the State Board of Higher Education. I've testified with them over the past 9 or 10 months is my duration of being the chair for the Oregon Student Association Board of Directors. And one of my goals as far as being on the Oregon Student Assistance Commission is to be able to continue to build the connections that I have begun to build in over this last year in my position as student body president and chairing the Oregon Student Association Board. And I believe, Senator Nelson, you were at the last State Board of Higher Education meeting in Eastern Oregon, where you came before the board and talked about how important it is for us to collectively come together to solve out our, you know, deal with our differences outside before we come into the legislature, to come as a unified front, I believe is the phrase that you used, to talk about making how we can come to the legislature and be as strong as possible. And I think that in my capacity sitting on the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, this is where I'd see my role fitting in very well, would be into help implementing and creating and building that unified front to come in and asking for and continuing to fund programs such as the Oregon Opportunity Grant, which is as our only need-based grant in Oregon for students attending higher education programs. That is incredibly, incredibly important and has been proven as being something that will allow students to attend, can be the defining point of whether or not a student will or will not attend an institution of higher education. So I feel very passionate and very strongly about some of the programs that, or all of the programs really that OSAC works with. I've also been able to work with the Access and Affordability Working Group with that is a committee of the State Board of Higher Education that has been looking at restructuring the Oregon Opportunity Grant allocation model. So that is also something that I would love to continue to work on in this position as well. So I would love to answer any questions that you have.
And your plans post-graduation?
My plans post-graduation, they're not too terribly specific. I'm not really sure of what I want to do very specifically. I am looking at working in nonprofit or advocacy work within the state, and I'm just at this point trying to branch out a little bit from the work that I've been doing over the past 4 years to get some more education for myself, but also to continue to work on the issues that I feel passionately about now. So I'm definitely looking at, you know, remaining in the state, working in nonprofit sectors, advocacy. I love advocating for students, and I love advocating for first-generation students as well, lower-income students, and really helping to build that bridge between high school students and their experiences in high school and being able to make that connection with their experience in higher education. So I'm not exactly sure, but that is the field that I am looking at. But
Senator Nelson.
Yes, I'm just hearing some wisps of information about a $14 million sitting out there that was set out for access for students.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite have my arms around that. Could you kind of explain what that situation is and what you think might be a solution to it?
I know which situation you're talking about. Unfortunately, I am not too educated around it at this point. It is something that I was hoping was going to come up at the last OSAC meeting, but I don't think has yet as far as what the committee is going to be talking about, what they're going to do with that surplus that is left over currently. At this point in time, I don't know if I necessarily have a solution, but I feel that there are a lot of reasonable explanations as to why that surplus is there, and I don't think that it was by any means the grant being overfunded. I think it was more of an access barrier that has been implemented for from various other avenues, and that I think that the amount that the grant is being funded at now, it's not really, it's more of an issue of getting students educated around receiving that grant through programs that the Oregon Student Assistance Commission has, such as the Aspire program, to be able to help them realize, because there are students, there are more than enough students who qualify to receive that funding, but there are definitely other barriers there that are preventing them from either knowing that those funds are even available for them, or other barriers preventing them from coming into institutions of higher education.
What kind of barriers?
Other forms of financial barriers, I think a lot of it has to do with education, and a lot of it has to do with students not being, especially in not having the services available to them, not understanding processes like the financial aid application process, college application processes. Yeah.
Senator Johnson.
That's the first time that I've heard about this, and I would suggest that it's unfair to ask you. You're a brand new appointee who hasn't gone through the process, but I would follow with where I think Senator Nelson was headed. Somebody better be preparing a credible explanation.
Absolutely. I completely understand that. I was shocked kind of to hear about the fact that the Oregon Student Assistance Commission has a surplus, but I would imagine that they should and will be talking with the legislature about what they will be doing with those funds, if anything, and definitely coming to you with an explanation for why there is such a surplus.
Senator Johnson.
Last session, Senator Morris and I put a lot of energy into what we call, just as a shorthand, good governance, best practices. Oregon is blessed to have citizens who are willing to come forward and sit on the roughly 200 boards and commissions that advise units of government. But we put a lot of energy in the Ways and Means process on trying to get good governance. And I would hope that, assuming you're confirmed tomorrow, that as an incoming board member, you would make it your duty to fully inform yourself, to make sure that your colleagues are fully informed, and to make sure that the management of the of OSAC is sharing with you everything. You're the public face of that commission, and people are going to ask questions deserving of credible answers. It has been my experience that all too often agencies are operating without fully informing their boards, or they have management structures in place that has the board come in every other month and just basically rubber stamp the agenda. I hope you would take it very seriously, the discussion that you've had with this panel here tonight, to be able to explain this. It's pretty serious, and I know nothing about it other than Senator Nelson opening the door. Somebody better have a good explanation.
Absolutely. I completely hear your concern, and I completely agree with you about board accountability and the board having a real role in the decision-making process. I have been on both sides of effective and ineffective boards and have been able to see the results of that, and I completely agree with you. And I already have relationships with a few commissioners already on the board, and then also I've been able to meet with Dennis Johnson, who is the new executive director of OSAC, and already be able to talk about some of these issues, but I have not yet been able to talk about issues such as the surplus yet. But I very much see it as being my responsibility as being on OSAC to address these concerns immediately.
Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much.
You.
We really appreciate you joining us, and good luck in your studies.
Thanks.
I have one on the five-year program, too.
Yeah.
So it's pretty common. All right, we're going to close, unless anybody else was to testify on the Student Assistance Commission, close that public hearing, open a public hearing on the Voluntary Action, Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. Mr. Baser, why don't you come on up, and we're going to get Ms. Shrestha on the phone. And then I think everybody else is by phone, so hopefully we can buzz through these pretty quickly.
Excellent. Hello.
Hello.
Chair Brown.
Great to see you.
Good to see you. My name is Joe Basler. Thanks for having me tonight. One of the reasons I would love to be on this commission, service has sort of been in my as long as I've known, we've had to do it. It's not it wasn't really an option. I grew up in Flint, Michigan, where there's plenty of opportunities to do some service. My dad ran the soup kitchen at St. Matt's there, and we would go, you know, every Sunday. Currently, I work for the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, Council 75, and so I'm hoping to be the labor representative on the commission. My good friend Rob Wagner just had his second child, and so he is stepping down from the commission. I've been involved with the commission for a few years now. The executive director and I are good friends, and I've done their How a Bill Becomes a Law training and help them work on their legislative strategy. I think this commission's main function is to be a pass-through for AmeriCorps federal money. And I think the people who choose that term of service are fantastic. They're interesting, they're smart, they're wonderful young people who are very hard, doing very tough jobs for almost no compensation. And I think I just would be love to be part of it and help out wherever I can. That's pretty much it. Any questions?
Before we take questions, Ms. Shrestha? Hello?
Hello, yes. This is Vandana.
Hi, this is Kate Brown. I've got you on speakerphone, and you're being piped throughout the Capitol. Got Senator Johnson and Senator Farioli to my left, and to my right I've got Senator Monis Anderson and Senator Nelson. Could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this commission?
Thank you so much. Be in front of you. Good evening,
Ms. Shrestha, we've got her. She's on a cell phone.
Yeah.
Do you have access to a landline?
I do, actually.
Okay. Can we call you on a landline? We've got really bad connection.
Okay. Yes. Can I give my phone number?
Sure. Absolutely. Sure. That'd be great.
Wait a minute, Madam Chairman.
It's coming better. We're actually.
Madam Chairman, yeah, I'm not sure you want to announce your telephone number. Yeah.
Right. But also, we've got a better connection. Ms. Shrestha?
James, take it offline.
Yeah, we've lost her. Okay. We're gonna disconnect you from the speakerphone, so your phone number's not being given or the number is not being given out throughout the Capitol. And James will touch base with you to get your phone, and we'll call you hopefully right back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
James, can you pick it up?
You got her?
Yeah, actually, Madam Chair, that might be something that we'd want to talk about as just a general protocol for this committee is using landlines. If the accommodation is made for somebody to call in, just assure us that we're on a landline.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for Mr. Basler? I think you're okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate you hanging around this evening. Hello? Did you get her? Okay.
What's happening is he has to make a call and then he actually has to transfer.
Okay. All right. So we still got
six people by phone.
Okay, but those are all appointments. Let's move to reappointments until they get her reconnected. Are folks okay if we do them in block in two places this evening? One, the reappointments, and the other, the first appointees. Any concern about any of the appointments? Okay. I'm going to open a work session for the consideration of reappointments to the following boards and commissions: Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board, Commission on Asian Affairs, State Aviation Board, Commission for the Blind, Board of Boiler Rules, Building Codes Structures Board, State Board of Chiropractic Examiners, Electrical and Elevator Board, State Housing Council, Trustees of the State Library, Mechanical Board, Board of Examiners and Nursing Home Administrators, Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors, Outdoor Youth Program Advisory Board, State Board of Pharmacy, State Board of Psychologists, Examiners, Residential Structures Board, Oregon Student Assistance Commission, Oregon Tourism Commission, and and the TriMet Board. I move that the appearances be waived and that the following reappointments be moved to the Senate floor with the recommendation that they be confirmed. I'm going to go through these.
Ms. Shrestha?
Yes, thank you so much.
Oh, perfect. We'll get right back to you. Just hang on for a second.
No problem. Okay?
Thank you. The reappointment of Craig Zell to the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board. The reappointment of Carol Suzuki to the Commission on Asian Affairs. The reappointments of Christopher Korich and R.P. Joe Smith to the State Aviation Board. The reappointment of Neil Klewer to the Commission for the Blind. The reappointments of Dennis Kaplan and Fred Widman to the Board of Boiler Rules. The reappointment of Bruce Dobbs to the Building Code Structures Board. The reappointment of George Siegfried to the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners. The reappointment of Thomas Fairs, Nolan Shefstead, and Wayne Siliason to the Electrical and Elevator Board. The reappointments of Scott Cooper and Stuart Leibowitz to the State Housing Council, the reappointment of Douglas Henricks to the trustees of the State Library, the reappointment of Guy Sperb and Mike Thrapp to the Mechanical Board, the reappointments of George Girding and Rob Hayes to the Board of Examiners and Nursing Home Administrators, the reappointment of Captain Smith to the Oregon Health Science and University Board of Directors, the appointment of Mona Treadway to the Outdoor Youth Program Advisory Board, the reappointment of Bernie Foster to the State Board of Pharmacy, the reappointments of Benson Schaefer, Terrell Templeman, and Marianne Yelnoski to the State Board of Psychology Examiners, the reappointment of Phil Damiano to the Residential Structures Board, the reappointment of Patrick Edvalson to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, the reappointment of Dave Tovey to the Oregon Tourism Commission, and the reappointment of Sue Van Brocklin to the TriMet Board. Any objections?
No objections, Madam Chair, but just a comment, and I'm doing this opportunistically because I think these two candidates for the State Board of Aviation are fine candidates. But I was made aware recently during the Connect Oregon process of some folks that flew from Newport up to attend a Board of Aviation meeting with the expectation that they would be allowed to testify with respect to their aviation projects, and they were not allowed to testify. These were mayors, city councilors, important elected folks who took time off from work, chartered an airplane, flew up with the expectation that they would be allowed to speak, and they were not only not allowed to speak, they were not acknowledged. And I had the occasion to fly to Newport the other day. When I walked into the fixed base operator, the first guy I talked to was the airport manager. He was on the ceiling. He was so angry. By the time I got downtown to the Salmon Summit, I had run into some of these city councilors as well as the mayor, and they were deeply offended. And so I would hope that the charge that all these renominees, and in fact the new applicants, take away from this process is that part of the value of these boards and commissions is their inclusiveness to all points of view, the ability to let people come and speak about the functions and purposes and missions of state agencies and boards. And I couldn't pass this opportunity without commenting on the fact that if these commissions function in such a way as to exclude the public, we're doing something wrong.
Totally agreed. Any other comments regarding these appointments? And I hope that folks have direct conversations with the folks involved.
I have already done that.
Absolutely unacceptable. Any further discussion regarding these reappointments? Any objections? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go back to the Commission on the Voluntary Actions and Service Commission. Ms. Shrestha, good evening.
Good evening. Thank you so much, Senator.
Thank you. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this commission?
Indeed, I will. Thank you again. Apologize for the bad connection before.
No problem.
Okay, I'm very excited about this appointment. I am very interested in being part of the commission. I am currently working with AARP as the Director of Community Engagement, and I have many years of working experience working with volunteers, both in the national level when I was working with Points of Light Foundation, as well as locally when I was working in Eugene as a volunteer coordinator for Women's Space. Volunteering obviously plays an important role in communities, and especially as our community society is aging, there are going to be increasing need for volunteers providing services, but also I think great opportunity in tapping the skills of older adults, and that's working with AARP, I bring that knowledge as well, working with older populations, and just generally keen on providing my expertise to the commission, and hopefully being able to impact Oregon communities throughout the state.
Great. It is my sense that this particular commission has more than its fair share of younger folks on the commission, and so I think your expertise in working with the our growing senior population will be much needed. Any other questions for Ms. Shrestha? I think you're good. We really appreciate your time and energy, and thank you for your willingness to serve the state of Oregon.
Thank you very much.
Take good care.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more to go. Let's do it. Yeah, I don't know. James is dialing up someone. So.
Where are you going?
Lori, do you want to carry the reappointments?
Okay.
That'd be great. And Sarah Nelson, would you carry the appointments?
Sure.
Okay.
Do you want to do all of them together?
Yeah. Is that okay with everyone if we do the actual appointments all together as well? Is that okay? Is that all asleep? Can I go through them as quickly?
Actually, we should go through this file.
Okay. All right.
We'll do that in the next one.
Okay.
Do you have one?
You have one on the line?
Okay. State Library.
State Library. Hello?
He's still dialing.
Okay.
State Library.
Yep.
Carl Jack. He has to transfer over.
Got it. Here it is.
Okay.
Hello.
This is a cell phone, and I'm wondering if you would like to use my landline.
We're perfect right now. We're good.
Oh, good. Okay.
Is this Ms. Pearl Gent?
Yes, it is.
This is Kate Brown. Thanks so much for being here. You're being piped throughout the Capitol. We don't have a lot of spectators at this point. I've got a full complement of senators, Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Farrioli, Senator Dave Nelson, and Senator Manus Anderson. This is the State Library Commission. Could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to serve on the Library Commission?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I want to thank the committee members for giving their time at this hearing. I know it's been long because I've been listening to the streaming. I'm also very honored to be nominated for this State Library Board position. My name is Mary Beth Pearl Gent. My address is actually Bend, Oregon, although I live about 3 miles from Sisters, and I serve on the Deschutes Public Library District Board as an elected member from that zone that stretches from Sisters to Brothers. So as you can see from my resume, and I'm sure you have that in my interest form, I've been a K-12 teacher, a school librarian, sometimes that's called media specialist or teacher librarian, a public library board member, and most recently I've worked as an adjunct faculty for Concordia University Teacher Education Program in Central Oregon, and also as a library consultant for the school districts in Central Oregon and Lake County. And while I have a background and interest in all types of libraries, I'm particularly concerned about the very critical needs of school libraries throughout this state. Due to the budget considerations, we've seen a severe funding decrease for school library materials and staffing, which has resulted in recent years in students in many districts not receiving adequate instruction in information research skill development. And all this is happening at levels from K all the way through to 12, and it's happening at the same time there's been a greater emphasis on making sure that students are prepared for the workplace or higher education opportunities that require very strong research and information literacy skills. So, in addition to my concern for school libraries, I'm also a very strong supporter of all kinds of libraries and particularly interested in serving on the State Library Board I see this as an opportunity to improve services in rural areas. I know that the State Library Board is interested in getting funding to areas that are currently underserved as well. So, You have any questions?
Yes. What's your recommended summer novel reading?
Oh, well, Nancy Pearl, who is no relation to me, has a great book out called Book Lust. And in there, people can get almost any kind of recommendation for their particular reading. But I do like Ireland by Frank Delaney. So that's one.
Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate your willingness to serve on as a member of the Board of Trustees for the State Library Board. Questions?
Thank you.
I think due to the lateness of the hour, you're off the hook in terms of questions, but we really appreciate your service. And I did note for the record that Congressman Walden did send a letter in support of your application, so you're in good hands.
Yes, and I believe I also have one from Ben Westland as well.
You do. I didn't see that, or I didn't notice it on purpose.
I did want to get that in. He would be very upset if he didn't.
You know your senator very well.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Okay, next. Ms. Ainsley? Okay.
Hang on. Have you ever heard that book last?
Lost.
Come on. I always end up
reading books by the same author, so I'm trying to expand my horizons a little bit.
I volunteer at the Beaverton Library on Sunday mornings, and I pull the holds list.
Oh.
The unfortunate part is this computer system was down on Sunday.
Oh, no.
So it's going to be a disaster this week.
Ms. Ainsley?
Yes.
Hi. Kate Brown here, Chair Rules. Have a full complement of state senators, Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Farrioli, Senator Dave Nelson, and Senator Lori Monice Anderson. Just would appreciate a few moments of your time to tell us why you want to serve on the Long-Term Care Commission and a little bit about your background.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Portland, and I've been here 76 years.
Okay.
And I think I'm getting ready for long-term care somewhere along the way. I hope not too soon, but as I was growing up and 10 years old, I took care of my mother. Mm-hmm. From the time I was 10, our family doctor was the home health, taught me to be the home health care person. So I was giving shots and doing all kinds of things that a home health care person did. And my mother had multiple sclerosis, so it was very debilitating. So for a school kid to be a home health caregiver, I've had a little experience in my own home. I'm a career counselor. I'm on the board at Mount Hood Community College Foundation. I've worked for David Douglas School District as a career counselor for 20 years, retired. And then I was hired by the Boy Scouts of America to be an exploring executive, a professional, for another 10 years, and had 14 high schools I managed with career development activities. And during that time that I was working at David Douglas, I was also still caring for my mother. And my mother was in, I was kind of fussy about the nursing home I had to put her in when I was no longer able to lift her and care for her. So I would visit the nursing home after school in the evening, which was on 123rd and Northeast or Southeast Stark, and it was St. Jude's Nursing Home. St. Jude was a nursing home that I had interviewed the manager or the director, Father Rene Bozarth from the Episcopal Church, who ran the nursing home. And he guaranteed me he was a registered dietitian and he had the best interests of all the patients at heart. Well,
my mother was physically, her body was wearing out, but her mind was really sharp. My father worked for the state of Oregon. He was chief electrical safety engineer for the state of Oregon and worked just down the hall from the health department. And when I realized that the care in the nursing home was less than ideal and that my mother could communicate with me very well and she was very lucid, and there were many people in this nursing home that seemed to be taken advantage of, and it really bothered me. And so when I saw the food trays being delivered that had sauerkraut and grits three times a day and plain gelatin with all the leftover vegetables in them in it and called salad, I began to question, and I went to the health department. And since my father had friends there and worked down the hall, they were happy to work with me. And I ended up becoming undercover for a few weeks, looking for some things that the health department was particularly concerned about. And I made some observations that closed the nursing home and actually smuggled some of the dinner trays out of the nursing home to a freezer in the basement of the sheriff's office. And just for evidence, because who's going to take anybody's word for anything these days? So anyway, I just felt like the people that were unable to care for themselves or speak for themselves were being highly exploited and taken advantage of. So here I read in the Portland Tribune on February 10th, Nick Budnick had written an article about the 5 years of complaints against the St. Jude nursing home that had then moved to 136th and, I forget the street it was on. But for all essential reasons, it was closed in 1967. And my mother was evicted. And since Mike Gleason was county commissioner at the time and a friend of the family, he immediately moved her to Edgefield, which was the county nursing home at the time. She became the first and the only paying patient out there until she passed away in 1967. So when I read Nick Budnick's article on February 10th this year, and St. Jude's still has more complaints against it than any other nursing home in Multnomah County, it has a whole list of infractions, and they claim that it was an old manager, and it was, well, they had all kinds of excuses. And I just think 40 years later, we're still dealing with exactly the same kinds of issues with exactly the same kind of nursing home, the same nursing home. And it's a little bit disconcerting.
Well, Ms. Ainslie, we certainly appreciate your passion and personal story on this issue, and I don't want to put on your shoulders protecting all of the consumers in the long-term care industry, but we certainly appreciate your perspectives, and obviously, I certainly think that Oregon is at the head of the list in terms of what we're doing nationally. So that certainly leaves me great concern about what's happening in nursing homes around the United States.
Absolutely.
Anybody have any questions?
just to say hi, Tina. This is Lori Monis Anderson.
Yes, Lori, I know you. nice to know you're there.
So thank you for your willingness to serve, and we really appreciate your commitment and passion that you bring to this issue.
You're very welcome, and if there's anything else, I'm open to other phone calls later on.
All right. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Holy smokes. James.
Transfer phone call.
Okay, so I wait till it turns green, though, right?
Yeah, it'll ring.
Yeah. Okay. I'm getting the technology down.
You might as well wait for the motion until you finish the.
Yeah, call. At this point. Thanks, you guys, for staying so late. And thanks, staff. I mean, there are cupcakes.
This
restaurant, there are homemade cupcakes.
They're excellent.
Do you want cupcakes? We can offer
Jane,
cupcakes.
Jane, there's cupcakes. You'll have cupcakes. Oh. Okay.
He's at work.
Hello?
Hello?
Is this Mr. Elliott?
Yes,
Hi, this is Kate Brown, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee. And
yes, how are you doing, Kate?
We're great here. We've kind of got a few more phone calls before we wrap up the evening.
Uh-huh.
We have a full contingent of your Senate Rules Committee, Senator Betsy Johnson,
uh-huh.
Senator Ted Farioli, Senator Dave Nelson, and Senator Monis Anderson. Excuse me, and I'm starting to lose my voice, which my colleagues will think is a good thing. Could you tell us a little bit about why you'd like to serve on the State Board of Tax Practitioners and a little bit about your background?
Well, I think that my background would fit me in pretty well. My tax lady actually asked me if I would consider this position, and she felt that my background would really help a great deal. I've worked within budgets. I've worked with people. I've been a region manager for American Plywood Association for a number of years. In fact, I spent 30 years with that company. I spent 15 years in the Deep South, so I'm used to working with different ethnic groups. No problem there at all. Presently, I'm on city council, completing my first term. I have to run for re-election this year. And I serve on two boards at the present, the Lebanon Senior Center Library Trust, where we're trying to raise funds and get a new library for Lebanon. And I'm very proud to be a board member of the Willamette Manor Assisted Living System here in town, which I think that's quite an honor. I'm not afraid to make decisions. I've been involved with city management positions for approximately 10 years since I retired, and I guess that's about it.
And you're currently on the city council?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, so I'll refer to you as counselor then.
Oh, okay.
Any questions for... You're off the hook. I think it's getting late enough in the hour, but we really appreciate you have a wealth of expertise that you bring to this position, and we appreciate your willingness to serve the state of Oregon and your local community as well.
Well, I think you'll find that once I commit to something, I don't back out.
Great. Thank you so very much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
Okay, Mr. Hickox.
Three more to go.
All right, guys. Yeah, sorry.
Barbarian.
This is the Tourism Commission on Tourism.
This is the Fruits of the Water.
Yeah,
Who's next? Mr. Hickox, he's with the Oregon Tourism Commission, or will be, assuming his appointment moves forward. I believe he is in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't go? No, but he was going to be in Texas for... Hello?
Hello.
Mr. Hickox? This is Kate Brown. I'm here with Senator Johnson, Senator Farioli, Senator Nelson, and Senator Monis Anderson.
Good evening, everyone.
Are you in Bandon Dunes this evening?
No, I'm in Dallas, Texas with the South Coast speech team.
How is your
son? In the National Friendship Competition.
How's your son doing?
They've all done very well. They're just, we work on it and can be real proud of them.
That's so great. Could you tell us a little bit, I mean, obviously your employment makes you perfect for this particular commission, but could you tell us a little bit about why you'd like to serve on this commission and your time and ability to do so?
Well, I'm a native Oregonian. I was raised in Tualatin and educated in the state, and also have been outside the state in my working career, having managed several fairly well-known operations in South Carolina, Florida, and California. And so, you know, I think I have kind of a great feeling about the state, and also have seen the things that can be done very well elsewhere, or that maybe aren't done so well elsewhere, so that, you know, hopefully the better parts of it all can be brought to bear on whatever opportunities that are that I participate in on behalf of the people. You know, I've always been involved in tourism and have been in the resort business all my working career, having managed Sun River and seen its evolution in the early days. Mm. Later, when I was president of Salishan, the, you know, expansion of Salishan and additional facilities, and of course more recently this development on the South Coast. So I think, you know, I mean, it's a part of my livelihood personally. It's what I've always been interested in doing. I have been for the different regions of the state, having lived over in the Baker City area, where Senator Melton's from, and having grown up in the greater Portland area and now living on the South Coast, having the Central Coast and in Central Oregon. I think I really have a great passion for the state and something that I want to continue to be able to help with.
All right, questions? Sarah Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Hi, Hank, how are you doing? I just think that we would be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit more about Bandon Dunes and the success that it has and the part you played in that. $25 million business now. Play over 100,000 rounds of golf, I think, in that place. It's just transformed that whole area. I've just been reading the book that came out about the making of Bandon Dunes. I think it's called Green Golf. And I think that's something everybody should read because it shows the difficulty that we had placing that golf course down there, particularly through the state agencies. They did everything they possibly could to prevent that from going in. But this group of folks that Hank was part of that basically worked through that whole process, got the land use permits, and fought through all the agencies. But it's one of those success stories, and I think Hank serving on this board is going to have a great understanding of, you know, taking care of the class. I mean, Senator Johnson's talking about the airport guys here. You know, you've got to take care of the people out there, and I think Hank will bring that to it. The other part that I'd like to bring forward, too, is the fact that as a tourism council, I think Oregon is not working hard enough yet to promote Oregon as far as the winter 2010 Olympics that are going to be held in Vancouver, B.C. And I hope that on the, as a member of that commission that you continue to light those fires underneath that board and under the commission and say, okay, we've got to really do some promotion. And because I think it's going to be just, you know, I don't know how many thousands of people coming up from California that would be able to stop off in Oregon and help us out here. So if you have any comments on any of those two things, I'd appreciate them, Hank.
Well, thank you for your comments, Senator. You know, the great thing about Bandon Dunes has been that it is the is a labor of love for the man that owns it. He has, you know, invested considerable amount of his net worth and created a facility that's completely public. It's rare to find something that doesn't involve a real estate component that's been so successful, and I'm impressed with your knowledge of our numbers. We're actually now, though, in about $1 billion business. The number of rounds you mentioned is right on the mark with the three golf courses, yet with two more to come and other you know, hopeful employment opportunities for people and so on, and a way to attract more people to the great part of the state. I think networking with the Vancouver Olympics is a great opportunity for Oregonians, and hopefully there will be a lot of traffic that will be pre and post of that event, and I would commit myself to do whatever I can to stimulate that activity.
Mr. Hickox, Senator Brown has stepped away from the dais for just a moment. This is Senator Farioli. There are further questions. Senator Johnson has a question.
Thank you. Not a question so much as a comment teeing off of Senator Nelson's exchange with you. You will bring, I think, to the Tourism Commission an understanding of the contribution that airports make to the economic health of our state. And while there still are some issues that have to get worked through down in North Bend, I had the occasion to fly down there 2 weeks ago and landed on the ramp, and I think conservatively there was $200 million worth of equipment parked on that ramp. I'd never seen so many corporate jets in one place at one time, and when I was talking to Mr. Sousa, he informed me that this was a low-volume day. I would love to be able to work with you on helping to resolve some of the management difficulties at the airport, but I think that you clearly understand the role that aviation plays in bringing people to your facility, and I think Senator Farioli, who worries about aviation in rural Oregon, as does Senator Nelson, we'll welcome that additional perspective on the board.
Senator, I agree with you 100%. And I appreciated your call and your comments about the equipment that you saw on the tarmac at North Bend and how dramatic this increase has been and how important the evolution of the terminal there and resolution of, you know, some of the management issues is to the ongoing vibrance of the tourism industry on the South Coast. And, you know, we really appreciate your support on these airport matters. You've been with us throughout the our lobbying effort to gain some funding for a new terminal, and you know I am committed to seeing that airport project through. I really appreciate your help with that.
Well, anything I can do to help you. You've got some management problems there with respect to dueling FBOs. You need to turn down the volume on that so
right.
you don't jeopardize your federal funding.
Yes, sure aware of that. Trying to do something about it, too.
Good.
And just remember, the Senate passed it twice, and both times unanimously.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah. Any other questions?
Thanks very much for your time. We'll wish your... Is it a team speech contest, or is it individual?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, four students from Marshfield and two from Bandon.
Oh, great.
And with the National Forensics Competition in Dallas, young people from all over the United States who have risen to the top in their home states. We're here with a few other Oregonian groups from various locations around the state, and it's a fierce competition. The talent is that these young people have is just remarkable. But we've made a good showing, and real proud to be here with my son, who will start at the University of Oregon next year.
Great. Well, we wish them all the best, and look forward to having them come give some speeches on the Senate floor sometime soon.
That would be great.
Thank you. Travel safely.
Okay. Next up, Diana Pinlot. And then we've got Bruce Abernathy.
And then we're done.
And we're done as soon as we get the motion done. You know what I said? Oh. I thought this was... It's the other way around. The vowels are switched. Are you going with my names? Yeah. It's off. Hello.
Evening.
And your name, please, for the record?
My name is Diana Pinlot.
Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee, and this is Kate Brown speaking, and I have at the dais Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Ferrioli, Senator David Nelson, yawning slightly, and Senator Manus Anderson. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the board? I lost my staffer, but the Board of Pharmacy, I believe.
Yes, I certainly will. First of all, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. I have been fortunate throughout my professional career to work in a variety of pharmacy settings. I appreciate all the opportunities that have become available to me over the years, and I'm grateful to those who have provided guidance to me along the way. Serving on the Board of Pharmacy is an opportunity to give something back to the profession that has given so much to me. I am presently the Director of Pharmacy Services for Peace Health St. Lucie Region. I am committed to quality improvement. I chair our Regional Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee and have been instrumental in the development of evidence-based practice protocols, community-acquired pneumonia, diabetic management, surgical antibiotic prophylaxis, and there are many others. I'm also the lead for a team of regional providers who are working on one of the safety initiatives of the Institute for Health Improvement's 100,000 Lives campaign. This initiative focuses on the reconciliation of a patient's medication list at each point of transition in care. I have tackled many problems and issues in my role as Director of Pharmacy Services at Peace Health, St. Lucie Region. Rural communities face their own unique challenges. I will bring to my service a rural health care perspective. Many complex issues face the profession of pharmacy today, and I am honored to have been nominated to be a voice for my community and my profession. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Well, we look forward to working with you. There are no questions that may be due to the lateness of the hour or your incredible qualifications for this position. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay. Abernathy's still on. He's on the Bend City Council, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm checking on
him.
Okay.
He's there? Okay. Okay. Let's see how fast. I think I can get a job as a reader for the State Senate once I get retired.
James.
Oh, good. Counselor Abernathy.
Hi there.
How are you?
Oh, it's a nice break. I've got a long meeting dragging on here, so it's a nice change of pace.
Yours is still going?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that makes me feel so much better. Well, we certainly picked the longest day of the year to proceed, so we'll have as much daylight as possible. I've got with me Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Ferrioli, Senator David Nelson, and Senator Manus Anderson. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, though most of us know and adore you, but also about why you want to serve on the Health Services Commission at this point in Oregon's history?
I think the most important thing people need to realize is I'm kind of a policy junkie instead of a policy wonk, as it were. And I've been on the council since 2000, been on park boards, school boards, and been staff to the Commission on Children and Families. I really like getting involved in community issues and issues that really have impact to the broader community. And I was, have been involved in health issues more sort of at the peripheral, on the periphery. But when I was called by Darren Kaufman and chatted a little bit about this, I really became quite excited about this opportunity. Obviously, I don't have a medical background. I jokingly say that my wife actually is a doctor, so in some ways she may be more qualified. But I've had an opportunity to attend just in an observation capacity one of the meetings, and I think it's just incredibly exciting to see the thoughtfulness that goes into the debate and the ability of really doing something that's incredibly innovative as a model nationally, and good public policy about how we can move our healthcare system into more of a prevention mode.
Right. Questions?
You get a two thumbs up from Senator Mona Sanderson, a public health nurse.
Do you know Dr. Paul Ekman?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Somehow I'm related to him. This is Senator Nelson, so if you see him, say hello to Dr. Paul.
Well, I'll say hello to Dr. Paul and to his wife, Kathy, absolutely.
Very good.
Anyone else? Did you enjoy the, did you do the MPA program, Eastern Public Policy at Harvard? Did you enjoy that experience?
I did the MPP program.
MPP, okay.
Oh, I thought it was great, yeah.
Good. All right, I don't think we have any further questions. We look forward to working with you, and I would assume that this role on this commission might change drastically if the HOPE initiative gets on the ballot and actually passes. So we would certainly look to this commission to help the legislature come up with a health care plan to meet all of Oregon's needs. So
I'm very excited. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
Okay, let's see.
Where did it go? There it is.
We lost it. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing. Are you guys okay if I just read through these really quickly? Yes, they're all yawning, of course. Okay. All right, I'm going to open a work session on the following. The appointments to the Commission for the Blind, Board of Boiler Rules. I'm sorry, I'm going to start all over. Employment Appeals Board, Land Use Board of Appeals, Commission for the Blind, Board of Boiler Rules, Oregon Board of Dentistry, Oregon Government Standards and Practice Commission, Health Services Commission, State Board of Higher Education, Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Trustees of the State Library, Long-Term Care Advisory Committee, Oregon State Lottery Commission, Board of Medical Examiners, Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors, State Board of Pharmacy, State Board of Psychologist Examiners, Public Employees Benefit Board, Oregon Student Assistance Commission, State Board of Tax Practitioners, Oregon Tourism Commission, Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm like, what's my next
thing?
I'm moving the appointments to the Senate floor of the following appointees. Do I need to go through each commission?
Just say Eric Carl.
Eric Larson, Michael Holston, Marianne Topolowski, Bruce, the appointment and reappointment of Bruce Fellows to the Board of Boiler Rules, Patricia Parker to the Board of Dentistry, Jeffrey Jones to the Oregon Government Standards and Practice Commission, Councilor Bruce Abernathy to the Health Services Commission, Professor Dalton Miller-Jones to the State Board of Higher Education, Professor Erlinda Gonzalez-Berry and Amber Ontiveros to the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Mary Beth Pearl-Gent to the Trustees of the State Library, Tina Ainsley to the Long-Term Care Advisory Committee, William Ely to the Oregon State Lottery Commission, Ramiro Gaetan to the Board of Medical Examiners, Roman Hernandez to the Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors, Diana Pimlott to the State Board of Pharmacy, Susan Latham to the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, Sue Nelson to the Public Employees Benefit Board, Aaron Devaney to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, Robert Elliott to the State Board of Tax Practitioners, Hank Hickox to the Oregon Tourism Commission, Joe Basler to the Oregon Volunteers, appointment and reappointment of Joe Basler to the Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, and Bandana Shrestha to that same commission. Any objections? I'm sorry, any further discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Carrier Senator Nelson, Senator Mona Sanderson, you're going to do the reappointments. Is there any further business to come before the committee? Tell my favorite Republican, thank you for the lovely flowers. Thank you to our good committee administrator for the fabulous homemade cupcakes. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for staying so late, and we're adjourned.
See you tomorrow.